Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the shining ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysms? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. Since ancient times, Egypt has expressed an irresistible spiritual magnetism on the hearts of millions of people. Experience 14 magic days in Egypt, exploring Cairo, the pyramids of Giza, and the temple of Dendera and Abydos with Maureen St. Germain. You cannot see it on your own as well as you can with this group. Click on the 14 magic days banner at X Squared Radio and join us in Egypt from October 6th through the 20th. Solar wind tonight is 332.9 kilometers per second, and the sun is again absolutely blank today. And there are no coronal holes facing Earth at this time. The sun is virtually without any anomalous activity. In the years I have been studying the behavior of the sun, I've never seen such a prolonged period of inactivity. Very strange indeed, considering the ever-increasing Earth temperature. Just to give you some examples of that, weather has not been pleasant everywhere. The center of the state capital, Villa Hermosa, is under between 2 meters and 6 meters of water, with only rooftops visible from the air. Some 300,000 are still trapped in their homes in Tabasco, waiting to be rescued by boat or helicopter. Not pleasant weather everywhere. Also tonight and tomorrow night, specifically tomorrow night, if you want to get out and there's no cloud cover, the torrid meteors are beginning. The annual southern torrid meteor shower peaks on November 5th. Now, although the torrid rates are normally low, only about 5 meteors per hour, those 5 can be doozies. The shower is a well-known producer of terrestrial fireballs and lunar explosions. So be alert this weekend for torrids. It is the oldest telescope in the world, and it lies at the bottom of the ocean. Ancient seafloor sediments have revealed that a supernova exploded during the Pliocene era and may have caused a minor extinction event on Earth. Levels of radiation come from iron 60, suggest the supernova was between 60 and 300 light years away, says Brian Fields of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says, it didn't hit us, or we wouldn't be here. Radiation from the blast could have weakened Earth's atmosphere, he says, exposing organisms to the sun's ultraviolet radiation. You have heard us discuss on this program before that supernovas are the origin of higher order elements. Otherwise, everything in space would be iron, since that is the lowest energy, most stable element in the universe. Everything will eventually cool down to iron unless we have these occasional supernova events. And these supernova events do create entanglement, kind of a unique physical entanglement between energy and matter. We'll talk about that more in just a second. Half a dozen possible landing sites have been selected for NASA's Mars Science Laboratory, due to launch late in 2009. The rover, the largest ever to travel Mars, will try to find out whether the red planet was once conducive to life. The rover should touch down on Mars in October 2010. It will study the makeup of organic compounds and how Martian rocks and soil have evolved over time. It will also explore the role of water in the planet's history and measure the radiation hazard from the sun and energetic charged particles from the galaxy called cosmic rays. Now, interesting thing about Mars, as you might know if you listen to this program, it does not have a magnetosphere, so whatever the sun puts out, if it doesn't get strike some molecule in the atmosphere, it's going to reach the surface. Could be a good reason why Mars is completely sterile right now. In a nutshell, MSL, that's the Mars Space Laboratory, is going after the question of habitability on Mars, says John Grant, a geologist at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. Scientists have considered more than 50 possible landing sites for the rover. At a workshop last week in Pasadena, California, they narrowed them down to 6. All 6 sites appear to have clay minerals, which scientists think must have formed in prolonged contact with liquid water. Kind of a neat idea. Well, you might want to know where the 6 sites are, so we're going to tell you. The 6 favored sites are, and if you'll just grab out your Mars map, you'll know right where these are. The Mars Vallis, which is 24 degrees north, an ancient water outflow channel with light-colored clay-rich rocks. Nili Fasse Trough, which is 22 degrees north, a fracture that has been eroded and partly filled in by sediments and clay-rich ejecta from a nearby crater. The Southwest Meridiana, or Meridiani, which is 3 degrees south, note that these are pretty close to the equator, all in all, a site where there is evidence for an ancient and widespread clay-rich layer near the surface. Holden Crater, 26 degrees south, an ancient lake bed with layered clay-rich sediments. Turby Crater, 28 degrees south, another ancient lake bed with diverse deposits, including clays. Now, some names that you haven't seen in there are Sedona, that's not in there. Any of the areas where the supposed glass tubes have been photographed, they're not in there. But they are going after clay. Clay seems to be the hold the best hope for ancient life on Mars. But I think they're all giving up, in a sense. I think they're putting all their eggs in the microbial basket and not really going after intelligent life that may have lived on or in Mars. They might be surprised. Well, Grant says he personally favors Holden Crater, but both Holden and Turby Craters, which lie in the southern hemisphere, could turn out to be unsuitable because the rover would arrive during the local winter. As a result, it might have to hibernate during the coldest spells because it couldn't function properly. I guess 150 below zero isn't conducive to good mechanical operations. And it's not clear yet how big a problem this would be. If operations were reduced by 50%, for instance, that would be a real hit, says Grant, who is joint chair of the Landing Site Selection Committee. Those of you that might know Grant there in Pasadena, you might just tug on his coattails and say, listen, there's a couple of hundred million people out here that would like to know what's going on around Sedona. So have a look. But those things are being worked on very hard as we speak, and we'll have a much better sense in the coming couple of months, he says. Now, getting back to entanglement, you know, we've talked about that a couple times on this program. By the way, tonight we have open lines, so I'm going to let you know how to get a hold of us here at the studio. Toll-free anywhere in the United States is 877-270-8714. Anywhere in Canada, also toll-free, 888-228-4494. And anywhere else, on planet, off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us. There are two numbers. The direct line, 530-413-4511. And the other number is 530-413-4515. If you can reach those lines, you can reach us here. Also, if you're a little too shy to come on the radio, you can reach me through AOL Instant Messenger. My call sign is Vision Officer. So any one of those four ways to reach us here at the studio, we'd be happy to talk to you just about anything you want to talk about. You might know two things that we really don't do here at this program. We don't do ghosts, and we don't do conspiracy theories. Unless you really have a good conspiracy theory, then we might talk about it. Entanglement. For those of you that are not big physics students, and for those of you that are physics students but may have not reached the level where you can discuss entanglement, it is a very interesting experiment that seems to be repeatable for the most part, and that is where two particles from an associated ion can be grabbed off electromagnetically, separated a seemingly infinite distance apart, and then the spin of one of those particles can be altered, can be changed by applying a field to it. The other particle, although untouched, unfettered, as it were, will instantly change spin as well. We don't know why it happens. It's kind of confusing. There are some theories out there, but we're not going to read about them until they get a little bit more hard experimental and repeatable data out there. The main subject that I'm talking about is definitely repeatable. There is an article out there, though, that says, poor old Einstein, he didn't much like quantum theory, and who can blame him? It's just so, well, peculiar. Nothing in the quantum world exists until you measure it. Certainty melts away. And then there's what Einstein famously called spooky action at a distance. He didn't like any of it, yet experiments show quantum mechanics to be the most accurate physics theory in history. I think we have a caller on the phone. Can you let me know what your name is and where you're calling from?
Yes, my name is Ted, and I'm calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Ted. Welcome to the program. What's up?
Hey, Brooks. Just curious about the Hollow Earth expedition. Could you, because I've been studying it for a little while and stopped looking into it for the past couple of months, just wanted to know, is there a specific date when it's going to take place? And if there is a specific date, is there going to be a website or some way that us people back here can find out what's going on?
Two excellent questions, and I will definitely answer both of them. But what I'm really interested in is, what have you found in your 2 months of study?
Just, I've read a couple of books on the subject.
What have you read?
I've read The Hollow Earth. Excuse me, not The Hollow Earth, but The Smoky God by Olaf Jansen.
That's a good one, yeah.
I read The Smoky God by Olaf Jansen. I've read Edda Dorfa.
Yeah, Edda Dorfa is also a well-written book. Now, Edda Dorfa is a story about a man who evidently wandered into the inner earth through Mammoth Cave.
Mm-hmm.
And after reading the book, and I had been to Mammoth Cave several times before I read the book, but after I read the book, boy, I went to Mammoth Cave with a purpose. I took the deepest, longest cave tour they had, and I quizzed out everybody I could. And, of course, several of my family has worked at Mammoth Cave for a couple of generations.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked around, what is the deepest part of Mammoth Cave that's ever been discovered?
Mm-hmm.
And short of a few cracks, the deepest the cave goes is 360 feet.
Wow.
That's a long way from going to the center of the earth. But
mm-hmm.
It was an interesting story, and I enjoyed it. And it might not be that the guy walked in 3D. He might have walked in a little higher dimension. What was the other book?
Smoky God, Edda Dorfa. What was the other one that I read? The Coming Race.
Oh, really? Now, that's one I missed. What's that one about?
Yeah, The Smoky God, The Coming Race. It's about a guy who, he didn't disclose his location where he was, but him and a buddy were snooping around in some cave, and basically one dared the other, I bet you won't come down here with me. And the other one was like, okay, I'll go with you. And anyway, they enter this cave, once they got down very deep, they saw these beings basically walking down there, and they basically go down there, and one of them is killed, and the other one is taken captive by these beings, and this person is made to stay down there for, 2 or 3 years, and he found out there are these beings down there with wings. Basically, they didn't know about us on the surface, and I mean, they were light years ahead of us in terms of their technologies and so forth. But that was, they could fly. I mean, it was just crazy stuff you would hear. But given the fact that there's been a lot of information that's been withheld from the public, you definitely have to have an open mind to read that type of stuff. So,
you might have to have an open mind to actually go into the cave. One of my IMers, his call sign is Loopness Burning. He says most caves have portal entrances.
Really?
It's covered a lot in conspiracy stuff when you read about the underground bases.
Yes, I know about them.
Evidently, you have to have a certain level of consciousness in order to be able to open these portals and pass through them. Hence, most cavers, most spelunkers go in there with a very 3D kind of closed mind, and they don't have an ability to open these portals. It's kind of interesting.
Wow.
But the interesting thing about Hollow Earth, and I too read my first book in 2001. I think I read a book called The Hollow Earth, which is now out of print. But by the way, Beyond Word Publishing is getting ready to, well, they just bought the copyright of that book, and they're getting ready to re-release it. They asked me to write an introduction to that book, which I turned in to them a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully we'll see that very excellent book back out in print with a brand new modern introduction to it. But anyway, that book kind of, I don't know, it piqued my curiosity, and it was kind of a slap in the face to conventional geology, which I'm no geologist, but I have some technology that's applied in geology, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, I really didn't believe it, but it just kind of stuck in the back of my mind, and each time a little piece of evidence came in, be it a, you know, a satellite photograph or a news story or some white paper that was published by a PhD or a candidate, I said, hey, you know, there's another piece of evidence. So, you know, this crazy idea of doing an expedition to the Hollow Earth makes its way to me about 2 years ago, and I said, hey, I might like to go on that. So I contacted them, and they said, oh, it'll be $20,000, please. Thank you very much. So I said, okay, I'll go. So I started, you know, raising my money and getting my experiments together. I was going to be on the team that helped design the gyroscope, which one of the aspects of the Hollow Earth, at least it existing up in the Arctic Circle, is that there is an anomaly called the Oceanic Depression. And this is where sea level isn't sea level, okay? It's like a big bowl up there. However, when you're in a sailing vessel, you can't really see it because you just don't have perspective. You only have 8 or 9 miles of perspective, depending on where you are on the Earth and how high you are off the water, hence the need for crow's nests in ancient or in historical sailing vessels. So you really couldn't get, you know, a feel for whether you sailed into a big bowl or not. And the only way to measure it accurately is a very precise gyroscope. So we started on the team to build it. And, gosh, about three-quarters of the way through the project, the current leader, whose name was Stephen Curry, very tragically and unexpectedly at a young age, dies of brain cancer. I mean, just up and goes. I spoke to him in November. In August, he's dead, and it's just amazing.
Wow.
So, you know, they needed a new leader, so they said, hey, you know, Dr. Agnew, would you lead the expedition? I said, well, okay, hold a little election. If you choose me, then I guess I'll take it over. So, you know, I've been on it now for a year, and we've done our best to raise global awareness that we're going to go, and we could use your support, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that brings us to the point where, okay, there is a website. The website is phoenixsciencefoundation.org. It's all one word, phoenixsciencefoundation.org. Now, that is our main nonprofit, and it has a page called APEX, which is Advanced Planetary Explorations. That is a for-profit LLC. So you can see we have two ways for money or donations or support to reach us, either by donation or by investment. Well, what are they investing in? That's a really good question, because what are you going to do? Well, we're going to, most people like you and like the world would experience such an expedition through film. So we sat around as a committee and said, gee, we really think the film might have some value. And, you know, given the fact that we had more than enough filmmakers who wanted to go, we did some quick math and figured we'd have about 3,000 hours of pretty good high-definition video. We could probably make a few documentaries out of this. So that's what we've been putting out there, and that's what we'll have on the website as well. The website will have a live link while we're on the expedition. You'll be able to log in, sort of like an online reality show, and we'll switch around from camera to camera so people can see what's going on the boat. And this is not just a boat. I mean, this is a 450-foot-long, 23,000-ton nuclear-powered icebreaker. There's only one. So that in itself is going to be pretty cool. I could just see, you know, 0 degrees C shuffleboard on the front deck, but much more than that. It's not everybody gets to go somewhere where the sun doesn't set for, you know, 2 months or 2.5 months. It's going to be interesting all the way around, and we're going to make sure that all the visuals that we can come up with, that we can find, are going to be visible, you know, by people who are watching.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's fun. And, you know, then the next thing was, okay, who gets to go? So we also, on that website, at phoenixsciencefoundation.org, and if you click on the Apex link, you'll read all the current stuff on the expedition and why we're going and what experiments we plan to conduct. There is an application, and it's very simple, just 6 simple points that people email to us, and we have about 700 people that have applied to go on this expedition, and from those, we will choose 120 people in January, and 100 of those will be primary, 20 alternates, because you know as well as I do, a trip that's 8 months away, things come up. Not
right.
The least of which is death, or maybe the most important of which is death, but other things come up, loss of job and illness and who knows what, but you got to have some alternates. So the cruise is
8 months away from now?
The cruise is targeted for August of 2008.
Okay.
Now, the ship makes 4 chartered ventures to the North Pole.
Okay.
They sell off the 100 seats at about $23,000 a piece, and they sell out in about 5 weeks each one. So evidently there are lots of people willing to pay, but they go to a specific spot close to the North Pole, and people go skinny dipping. It's sort of like an Alaska cruise, but if you do a little bit of research, you see that they don't go near the magnetic North Pole, and they don't go near the area on the opposite side of the pole from the magnetic North Pole. Both of these are areas of interest for us.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because we you know, think that it's historically accurate, but also there is satellite and seismic data that make those two areas very interesting to us. Now, the one on the opposite side of the circle, the one way over on the northeastern side of Russia, has never been seen before, not by sea. It's been under ice for hundreds of thousands of years. But thanks to global warming, it's now accessible by a boat this size. And we're going to see it for the first time. And this is like going to a new planet for lots of people.
So let me ask you this, because I believe I witnessed on, I believe it was Stephen Curry's website, I think it was like a picture of these huge animals. And if I'm not mistaken, they were located around the vicinity of Siberia. I mean, is this real? I mean, definitely, I haven't seen. I mean, these animals are like, they're humongous. I've never seen them, you know, around here on the farm or anything. And when I saw that, I said, wow, I mean, these animals had to come from somewhere. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I sure do. And the interesting thing is they're not just that. We've seen sea animals, sharks and rays and different kinds of plankton, even squids, that are showing up now that we have never seen before. It's very, and they're mature animals. These aren't babies that grew up in our seas.
Right.
It's clear they came from somewhere.
Somewhere.
And it really, yeah, it adds to the curiosity, or at least the anomaly, that there might be a seafloor vent that goes between oceans, one that's under the crust and one that's over the crust.
Wow.
Add to that Washington University's Dr. Y Sessions and his undergrad or his graduate team. They went through 600,000 seismograms that were done by the USGS.
Mm-hmm.
They never analyze them. They just crank them out. These are generated every time there's a major earthquake. These listening stations all around the planet are tied together, and they sort of do a CAT scan of the Earth, right?
Right.
But they don't really examine them. They just crank out the seismograms. Well, this team evidently got a grant, and they went through them all, and they put them all into a computer model, and guess what they found? They found another ocean the size of the Atlantic Ocean underneath the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow.
And they published it. This is mainstream news. We talked about it on this program.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. So what if there is a several hundred mile long vent that connects the two oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And some sea life manages to get into that passage and make its way to our ocean.
Mm-hmm.
We snare it, put it on, you know, Drudge Report or on ABC News, and it flashes on and flashes off, and no one ever thinks a thing about it. But those of us in the Hollow Earth community put that in the spreadsheet, and it just keeps adding up.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. I mean, it's just fascinating. Just to know that quite possibly there's a whole new world underneath our feet.
Well, that's what they thought in medieval times, too, when the world was flat. Oh, no, you can't sail over there. You'll fall off the edge. But somebody had the, you know, fortuitous,
We have another person with you.
Edit, that's all right.
Oh, hold on just 1 minute, caller. We'll get to you. Somebody had the courage to sail over the edge. And guess what they found? People standing upside down on the other side of the planet. How interesting. And we're there again. By the way, Lupus Burning says that most of these portals appear in the Pacific, and that's why the Japanese keep snaring all these fish. So anyway, have I answered your questions?
Absolutely.
Ted?
Thank you.
Excellent. No problem. Thanks for coming on.
Okay. Have a good one.
Hello.
Okay, caller. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
It's Haya. It's from Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh, hi.
Hi. I was going through some of your tapes not too long ago that I picked up when we were at the conference this July.
Uh-huh.
After listening to you. And since I've been back to Victoria, I have actually been doing my own little research, and I've been taking a lot of photographs, and I have been coming up with some extremely unusual orbs.
Really? Tell me about those orbs.
Very clear, very bright. Not, you know, like the ones that are up in Mount Adam that I've seen up to now have been fairly faint. Some of them are bright.
Uh-huh.
But I find the ones I've been taking down here, I get bright orange ones, I get blue ones, I have ectoplasm. Actually, I took some on the 3rd of this month, and I've actually sent them to you. I thought you would find them very interesting because when you were talking about the Buddhist monastery, you did a pan up of the orbs above the Buddha.
Right.
It just struck me. I sent you a file, and it says orbs, and I just thought you would find them extremely interesting because I find they're changing too. They're opening.
Yes, they are. Oh, the photographs are absolutely stunning. They really are. I have another friend of mine who I met at one of the expos. His name is Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And he says hi, by the way. He's on one of my IMers that's on there. Lots of people are interested.
I did send them to your email address to be at you
at x2-radio.com.
I didn't know where else to send them to.
Okay. Well, that they got to me.
Okay, and
it will
be under Haya Kingsbury, you know, it will be under there. And I sent you a whole file, and if you didn't get them, I'll resend them. There's some extremely unusual.
Are they other shapes besides round?
Yes, I mean, I have a whole collection since I've left since July, and I've had rectangular, kind of white with blue.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, I know you're getting great pictures, and I have two friends. One is Michal Ledwith, who's just, I think, the master orb photographer, and great teacher, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and Tanya Maidenford, and both of them, by the way, are now at the Orb Conference in New York, where Beyond Words Publishing is introducing the new book called The Orb Book. I'm interested to know what it is you're doing when the orbs show up. Because you can't just, you know, go out in a commercial time and snap a picture and hope to get an orb.
I actually asked them to come in.
Yeah, how do you do that?
And
tell me about that.
I don't, it's not like you're, I just put out like James has always suggested, just put out there that you would like to. And I really can't say a specific thing, but just out of the blue, I just have a sense that they're coming in. And I have, it's not like it's, sometimes I know they're not around, and then other times I know they are around. And I have found there's been a huge change in them recently. I've noticed
have you seen any hexagonal
They started off,
ones?
Like I've got some which are very, very clear, extremely blue. You can see the inside. And then you've got others which are bright white. They look like a seed pod, but they're dark openings in them.
Right, right, the holes in them.
There are holes in them.
One
and
of
then
my,
I have one or two that looks like they're spraying something out. It's like you have to take a look at them individually and magnify them when you look at them. Some of them I found, light purple, a streak in the sky, and as I magnify them, they're like two and three orbs within the rectangle.
Have you gotten to the point where you have asked yes and no questions and then taken pictures before and after those questions to see if there's any difference in the orbs themselves?
Well, I've noticed that for the very beginning, I was predominantly pulling in blue orbs.
Uh-huh.
And
I get those a lot.
The past few weeks, I've noticed I've been getting in some light orange, some very dark orange, and mainly a lot of white, very, very white ones with some smaller gray.
What about the details on the inside of the orbs? Are they very clear?
Actually, some of them are extremely clear, almost the point you want. If you've seen a fossilized shell, the round ones?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you know how they have, they're circle within circle within circle, and they're almost like there's something within it, there's texture?
Yeah, they almost
look
like a mandala.
That. Yeah.
Like, you know what a mandala is, the Tibetan
mandala? Yeah, they look very much like it. It's almost spooky. I've had one. I have a what I call ectoplasm because I just don't know what it is. It started off, I was taking a picture of I've been taking these pictures right outside of my window, and I live right along the water on the gorge in Victoria.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
What I've noticed is predominantly I'm getting some very, very bright ones in, and one day I just took it because I just got such a huge, a strong vibe, and I took a picture, and it looks like ectoplasm that's draping, that is actually a pyramidal shape, but it's not really complete pyramidal, but it's like a peak and stick around the base of it, and it's got different colors within it. They almost look like they could be...
You mean there are more colors inside? Like, so you have multicolored orbs?
No, my orbs aren't multicolored. They
are these like natural...
They're extremely red, extremely orange, very yellow, or very blue, or white. And I will have some that look they're traveling, because you can see that it looks like they're coming out. Some aren't even completely round. Some of them are actually more oval shape.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, do they
some look like spinning tops.
Do they have, like, any kind of sacred geometry to them? Are they geometrical, or are they amorphous, like natural geometries?
Yeah, you can see them with the large ones. Actually, with the file I sent you, there's one huge blue one, and there's also another huge yellow one with two openings in it. And then there's a group of them with white, smaller ones and larger ones, but extremely, extremely white. And,
how do you feel when they come in?
Overcast skies, so there's no chance of moon interfering.
How do you feel when they come in? I mean, I know you're sort of
like
emotionally...
I feel like on a high.
Oh, really?
It's like I get a buzz. It's like I just can't explain it. It's like... It's an internal. It's like something downloaded to me when I was away, and I came back because I've had trouble with my electronics. It's like everything was blowing out on me. My phones were blowing out, my computer.
Yeah, I wipe out room keys myself. Wipe out room keys. I spend a lot of time in hotels, and I just have to put the keys somewhere in the vehicle because if I carry it on me, my body's just going to wipe out the magnetic strip. So
well, I stopped wearing watches.
And it appears as though you're getting some very high energy orbs.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, like, I was taking a better look at just yesterday. I was looking at the orbs that I took at James, and I noticed his are lighter, and they're multicolored.
Yeah, one of my IMers, Lupinus Burning, is saying that you're really grabbing some high-energy stuff there. Not everybody gets to see this, so I'm really interested as to what you're doing when these come in. Are you trying to communicate out? Are you receiving any messages? What kind of communications
messages,
are you having?
It's like, how do you sense that you know you have a job to do, but you don't quite know what it's supposed to be? But you're just kind of waiting to be informed?
Yeah, he's asking me to ask you or tell you that high-energy craft and beings is probably what you're witnessing. These are ones that don't need a craft to travel. So do you get a feeling that as to where they come from? Do they come from the inner Earth? Do they come from another world, another dimension? What are feelings that you get on this?
Okay, the ones I would get down there, Sachs Point, which is right on the water, they're a different quality, and I would say they're probably, they come from probably, I would say probably under the water.
Under the water, wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, the ones that I'm getting right now around the apartment building, there's small ones, there's large ones, but they seem to be predominantly blue and white, and as I said, I've been pulling in a lot of the orange. But I've been pulling in ectoplasm in blue streaks as well.
Well, one of our other guests, Michelle Denman, I don't know if you caught her program a little while back, but she is really saying in the last 3 to 4 weeks, what she calls orange energy has really been turned on in our dimension, in our world. And this orange energy evidently is some very enlightening energy. It puts us in touch with our ability to heal ourselves. It puts us in touch with prosperity energy. I don't understand it all, but she's very clear on that. And I just find it incredibly interesting that you also are picking up the orange energy with your camera.
Well, you know what? I've been doing something when I've been coming back. I created a website, which is about 144 pages long, which is what we call an information website. And I've donated it to people as a gift, my gift to humanity.
And what's that website? What is the website? And we'll put it out there.
Do you want me to give you the website?
Yeah, go ahead. Give me the website, and our listeners,
okay,
maybe they have something.
Okay, it's www.haiashealing.ca, and it's haiashealing.ca. And I'm a holistic healer, so I'm doing this to help people. And since I've come back, and I've been doing a lot of helping people, you know, just for no reason, just to help them, and I'm finding that I'm pulling in the orbs. I mean, my friend next door gets so excited because she says, it's like I'm in a dead sleep, and all of a sudden I'm woken up. I don't know why. I go to the window, it's like I'm almost in a trance, and I'm just clicking.
Well, Anne, what are your friends saying when you show them the pictures and you say, hey, look what I photographed?
It does?
It
scares a lot of people.
Oh,
they don't understand it, or other people say, oh, they just fluff it off like, oh, well, it's just orbs, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess seeing
but
is believing, but only if it's with the rods and cones of a natural eye, I suppose.
I believe they're energy. They're not only energy, but they're intelligent.
Right.
I sense them. It's just like I haven't quite grasped what they're trying to say, but I believe if I keep on opening myself up, because it's just incredible some of the stuff I'm putting up. I mean, I don't understand it. As I said, I've sent some to James, but I have
Lupinus Burning, he does tell us that orange is equal to creation. It's a basic interpretation of creation. I don't know if I can say this on the radio or not, he said, but orange is used in sex work. When you do energy stuff, sex is equal to creation. Actually, I don't know that sex is equal to creation, but I know that when I went into Tibet and I went into some of these mandala buildings,
Mm-hmm.
Creation, the act of creating a universe or a galaxy or a planet or another species, is involved in the copulation of gods. So this orange energy could have a lot more to do with that than you think.
Possibly. It's funny because that my name means life. It actually means life in Hebrew, which is kind of interesting. But what I find also, that I've been looking at the orbs very carefully, and I take them like in rainy weather, in windy weather, in clear weather. I get extremely light ones that are purple, that are, you know, but they're definitely, they look like they're spears coming out of them. I get dark gray ones, which are smaller, that look like they're hairy. And then I get some extremely bright, bright white, and they look as though they've got rings within rings in them. And then lately, I've been noticing they're all opening up, and looks like something's coming out of them.
My very excellent friend and very experienced orb photographer and philosopher, Michal Ledwith, would ask you, since you're having such great interaction, and it's obvious that you don't have to go very far with your camera to find orbs. I know I've been snapping pictures for a long time, and I catch one here and there. Although when people...
Really?
Yeah.
They've been following me everywhere. It's like, when I left, it's like the car drove itself home.
Well, you're one of the special ones.
It's like I've got an energy that just keeps on going.
Well, you're one of the special ones. So I would ask you, when you're out there and you really feel in tune, start asking some questions, not just to personal questions, but maybe, you know, what do we as a race, or we as a planet, what can we expect? How can we help? What is it that we can do to help turn things around? And if you get an answer, you know, please come back to X Squared Radio anytime. The phones are always on anytime between 5:30 and 8:30 Pacific time, and let us know what you find out. You're welcome anytime.
Certainly, and I will send you some orange orbs if you'd like.
Absolutely, and the higher resolution, the better. I mean, I like to just put them up on the wall and look at them, because they're like icons. They're like, when you look at them, they seem to awaken something like a memory inside me, and they make me feel much better.
Well, it's like, it is. I would totally agree with you. It's like, I just feel like nothing can hurt me, nothing. I'm totally protected, you know. It's a very good sense of clarity, and yet I'm not quite, I know that I'm supposed to be waiting for something, but I'm not quite sure what. But I know I will find out.
Well, I can suggest that you probably need some tools to unlock that secret. Just keep your eyes and ears open, and the thing that you need to interpret what's going on, because, you know, I really believe this is happening for a reason to you and with you, and you're going to know what that is, and it's important. So pay close attention, and when you find something out, let us know, okay?
Oh, yes. And by the way, I just have a sense to tell you.
Yeah?
That trip of yours is going to be successful, by the way.
Wonderful. Well, I'll take it to the bank.
I thought I'd let you know.
I know.
I don't know why. I just know it's going to be successful, and you're going to get the answers you need.
Well, you know, as I travel around the country and talk to people, I get three different kinds of looks. One is, oh boy, Hollow Earth, what a nut. And the other one is, you know, the government's never going to let you go there. And the other one is like you. I can't wait to see what you see. I can't wait to see what you bring back. And, you know, I'm just a little boy when it comes to this stuff. So I'm...
Oh, my God, I go with you.
I'm encouraged.
Really, I'm the adventure type, you know?
Definitely. That's great. Well, we figure most people are. So we're not going to keep it to ourselves. Everything we find, you'll know. And so.
Oh, I know. So I will send you some more orbs. I hope you enjoy them.
Very good. I definitely will. Thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, take care of yourself.
I will. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, Earth Explorers, we're about wrapped up for the first hour. I can't believe how fast these things go. I've got instant messages popping like popcorn over here. That's why all these great questions are being thrown out. And as luck would have it, many of these guests that we have on the computer are experts on a lot of things. But we want to take all the phone calls we can. We'll do about 5 more minutes this hour, and then we'll start again next hour. So we have another caller. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, Brooks. This is Christopher. I'm calling from Southwest Florida. Love your show, man.
Hey, Christopher. Thanks for coming on. What's up?
Yeah, well, I you were talking about orbs, and a while back I had sent you an email with some of our photos that we have here. And we get some incredible, incredible pictures. We live in what I'd like to call an orb collective.
Oh, really?
It's some kind of a vortex or something. We're not sure, you know. I mean, a lot of all this is theory and so on. But we've documented well over 25, 30 different kinds of orbs here.
No kidding. How long have you been doing it?
About 3 years. And it's just really incredible, the energy that's in this location that we're at. And when you go outside, you actually feel them here. You know, it's like a Juliana is my significant other, and she has her way of feeling them. I get this kind of a chill through my body, and it's not like a chill from cold though, but it's just a feeling of knowing that they're here, and then you can feel it within your body. And I get my camera out, and of course it's the digital photography, and I'll talk to them, you know, about communication and contact and wanting to, you know, understand about them and share information and all this other stuff. And I've actually got pictures of them in contact with me, you know. There's the typical round orbs, which we have, I call like ribbed orbs, you know, the ones
yeah.
with the hole in the center with the lines to the outside. And I have pictures of them standing still and jetting across the screen as well. You can see the little trail behind them. And then we have these, what I call radiating orbs, which they're like two rings, a circle in the center and a second circle. And then they just radiate this energy out from the outside around them. It's so incredible. And the colors are
bright. Christopher, let me ask you a question. When this is happening, when you feel this tingle, this kind of maybe a higher awareness that's going on, do you have to be in a special mood, or are you projecting some kind of feeling or invitation for this to happen?
Well, I call them in. I call them in. Usually the first couple of photographs is maybe one or two, you know, and as I call them in, I request contact, I request communication, I think about, you know, I have to be in a loving, peaceful kind of mood, I guess, or energy. Because when it's hectic and stressful, they don't seem to be as active. Although they're always here, you know, they're always here. But
do they overlap, or do they form any kind of patterns like a vesica pisces, or do they?
Well,
I've
got quite a few patterns. I've got golden orbs, I've got orange orbs, green orbs, blue orbs, purple orbs. I mean, the colors are unbelievable, and I also have one incredible picture that I think is very important to the study of orbs as well. One of the theories about the problem with digital photography, they say that it's a flaw in the technology, and that there aren't too many pictures of orbs actually coming out from behind things. Well, I have one that is coming out from behind the roof that gives you an actual reference for size. And you can see it's cut right in half as it's coming out from behind the roof of the house. And I think it's a very important photograph.
I actually saw an orb photograph that was taken in a cave. It was a vertical cave. They went down in by rappelling. And when they got to the bottom, there was a light shaft coming down into the cave that sort of illuminated the cave enough where you didn't have to take a flash. So this friend of mine started taking pictures, and he started noticing orbs. But as soon as he, you know, tried to alert everybody that, hey, there are orbs in this room, they moved out. And he actually has a picture of an orb halfway in and halfway out of a solid stone wall.
Awesome, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, those types of photos definitely blow that digital technology theory out the window big time.
Well, sure, and I have friends that take orb photography with regular film. So what it has to do with, and here's my friend Michal, who's just made a science of this, and he's got this new book coming out called The Orb Book, is coming out as actually this week, published by Beyond Words Publishing. And he says that when you set off your flash, you actually have a phosphorescent or a fluorescent effect from the energy of the orb itself that's in the visible range. Now, it's too fast for your eye to pick up, but the CCD or the chip in the camera does pick up the flash and puts it on the picture for you. Some of the faster film, 400 speed, 1000 speed, it can pick it up, but you're going to get a lot of graininess. The digital technology is by far the best with the extended spectrum to pick these things up.
Yeah, and I think that the flash itself, of course, you know that the frequency of the light is different than just the regular frequency and the frequency of our eye, and that's probably another reason why they seem to come up is because of that frequency of light. And some of the study that I want to do is I want to try different light frequencies, flash frequencies of light, to see what else can happen, because, you know, we can only see in such a small spectrum, as you know, and there's just so much more beyond that, you know, so I can imagine
absolutely.
if we experimented with so many different frequencies of light to actually illuminate things that are not being seen with the frequency that's pretty common, you know, with the digital technology now.
Well, so what do your friends say when you come up with
we send a lot out, and everybody is just so amazed. We have these things here. I call them EBLFs, energy-based life forms. They're amoebic-shaped orbs. They're not. You see, I kind of think orbs are a great explanation for the round ones because they're orbulent, you know.
right.
But there's so many other shapes out there, and these EBLFs, they are so incredible. They're amoebic shape. They're sort of free flowing amoebic shape, and they're all different.
That's incredible.
Oh, they're amazing. I had an incredible thing. I came out very sad about the world one night, and I was talking to God and my guides, and you know, just having an emotional moment. And I set my camera on the tripod, and I was using my timer. And, you know, I'd set the camera up, and I'd press the button, and they'd come over, and I'd continue praying and talking and so on. And this one photograph, I was totally engulfed by this amoebic-shaped orb, this amoebic-shaped EBLF. I mean, you can see me through it. You can see it's wrapping around me. It's just an incredible, incredible photograph.
And how did you feel as that was going on? Did it make you feel
after
better?
After it was over, I mean, during the time it was happening, I was still kind of stuck in my emotional state, you know. But after it was over, I sort of had this kind of sort of free feeling, you know. It's like, for instance, in our backyard, what I call the compound, I was asking for contact and communication, and I got a photograph. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was feeling them there. I was having those chill sensations and this uncontrollable smile feeling that I get, and where you ever just kind of have the sides of your face just want to smile, you know?
Like I have right now.
I know they're all around me right now. I'm outside on the front deck, and it's just, I just know they're everywhere.
And I got this feeling in my flesh. Chris, we got to take a quick break, about 3 minutes. Can you hang with us through the break?
I certainly will.
All right. Just try to be quiet on your phone as we take this break, and it won't go out over the air.
Sounds good.
This is X Squared Radio, and I'm Brooks Agnew, and Christopher's on the phone from Florida, and we'll be back with more X Squared Radio after these messages. Don't go away. More of X Squared Radio after this. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. It's about a balmy 42 degrees tonight, so we like the stars up here, quite beautiful. Hey, X-ray astronomy has received a badly needed boost now that the European Space Agency has shortlisted an ambitious X-ray observatory called Zeus, with an X, for a possible launch in 2018. It's one of the first really good pieces of news for the high-energy astronomy in quite a while, says Jonathan McDowell, an astrophysicist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. That is because no new major X-ray missions have gotten the go-ahead since NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and ESA's XMM Newton Observatory were launched in 1999, raising the possibility that astrophysicists might lose much of their window on the X-ray sky when the mission ends. Zeus, that's the X-ray Evolving Universe Spectroscopy, is designed to probe deeper into the universe than Chandra, to be stationed at the Lagrange L2 point 1.5 million kilometers away from the Earth. It includes a pair of spacecraft, one containing a focusing optics with a collecting area of 5 square miles, the other a set of X-ray detection instruments. The two spacecraft, which would fly 35 meters apart, would have to be coordinated precisely to keep the optics focused on the detectors. Now, this detector boasts a sensitivity 30 to 50 times greater than the XMM Newton Zeus would study the formation of the largest black holes in the universe and would help test Einstein's theory of general relativity by observing blobs of gas whipping around black holes. We actually have some pictures of that in our two books, The Arc of Millions of Years. Speaking of books, I was getting the title wrong of Michal's book. The book is actually called The Orb Project, and it is published by Beyond Words Publishing, the same publishers that put out The Secret. And his name is Michal Ledwith, L-E-D-W-I-T-H. Make sure to check that out. It's definitely going to be a good read. And speaking of orbs, we have Christopher on the phone with us from Florida. And we were talking about his interaction with these energy beings. So let's continue where we left off. Christopher, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, Brooks. I'm here.
All right.
As I was telling you, I was out back, and I was calling in the orbs, and I'm always asking for contact and communication. And I get this feeling sometimes of, like, this tightness in my head, you know, like I'm being downloaded or something, to the point where it's almost uncomfortable. And during one of these download times, I had taken a photograph, and my head was completely wrapped in one of these EBLFs. It was really an unbelievable feeling, and I don't remember, as hard as I try, the only thing that ever came to me from any of these, and it was only one time, and I've had these downloads quite often, is just the word light beings. That's it. Just light beings. I don't know if that came from in me or it came from the download or whatever, but I believe it came from outside of me, you know.
Have you noticed any changes in your life, in your prosperity, in your personal relationships, in your ability to say handle stress or anything like that? Are you these downloads? I know a little bit about them, not too much, but because the only one that I had was a whole bunch of information in a short amount of time, and it's taken me about a year to assimilate it. But it appears
that you're able to remember it.
Well, you know, bits and pieces are coming. I've drawn some things, and it seems that, well, I don't really know how to put this. It seems that while I sleep, I'm having conversations, but the conversations are not in English, and I've been trying for over a year to figure out what it is that we're saying. I mean, I wake up in the morning, and it seems like I have a mission, like I know what the next step I'm supposed to take that day.
Yes.
And
yes.
It seems like, did you ever see the show, the television program called The 4400?
Yes, I saw a couple of them. Yes, I did.
Well, I don't remember too many of the episodes, but I do remember the intro. There was this little girl on a bicycle, and she gets on her bike, and she rides over to her friend's house, and he puts his bicycle helmet on and slides his baseball glove over the handlebars of his bike, and they go riding off together, you know, somewhere 5, 6, 7 blocks while the intro music is playing. They park their bikes, swing down their kickstands, get off the bike. She slides the glove on his hand, grabs his wrist, holds it out, and a baseball hit over the wall at the stadium lands in the glove.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what I'm talking about, positioning. The ability for other dimensional, and I'm going to say slipped from time, I guess, information coming to you so you know where to stand and where to hold your hand out when the resonation comes from the universe.
I kind of think there's a myriad of things that might be associated with this, very similar to that synchronicity that you're talking about. And it's like, for instance, it's like these knowings that I get, okay? Sometimes all of a sudden I'll start talking about something, and the intensity of the information, the feeling of, after I've said all this profoundness, the profundity that came out of me, I look over my shoulder and say, like, you know, where'd that come from? Because I don't ever remember that being inside of me, you know? And I think that sometimes that happens, you know, and I believe it's associated. I don't know if it's my guides or if maybe these are my guides. I don't know. But And then, of course, as far as abundance goes, one thing I've noticed in our life, especially in the past bunch of years, is that everything always happens when it's supposed to happen, and that kind of sounds a little vague, but, you know, like, when we need something, it's there.
Well, who do you think designs that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, it's like timing, for instance. Like, for instance, we're putting together some things, like a new website called Experiencers Forum, and for people that are experiencing things and we're going to try and bring people like yourself, as a matter of fact, on there too, into the e-zine and the blog and to you know, the radio station and so on and so forth. And as a matter of fact, this, I guess, is a formal invitation, but anyway, we're hoping to launch that in about a month, because there's just so many people that are outside of the spiritual realm that are just, you know, documenting these different orbs and these different energies and stuff like that. And we want to be able to bring everybody together to create a big database, you know, of all this information, so we can actually get an actual grassroots meets the best mind study, you know.
Wow, that sounds very intelligent, very purposeful. Let me get back to my question, because I think it's key to understanding how you interact with the energies, why they are here, and maybe why you feel that they're possibly your guides. If I were to hand you a five-sided die, and each one of the sides had a number choice that you could choose instead of roll, and one of them was, say, what percentage of life is destiny and what percentage is your choice, would you say 100% of life is destiny and zero choice?
Well, I believe it's all. You see, I'm one of the people that believes in the it all theory. I think, I think that it all works together. It all interacts. You know, it's like, you know, they say intelligent design, evolution, and creation. I don't think it's any one of the three. I think it's all three. You know, it's like global warming and the fluctuations in the universe and all this other stuff. I think it's it all. It's not either one or the other. Man just tends to have this ability or desire or need to put a label on something. Right? I think it's a comfort zone or whatever.
Well, maybe it is, in fact, the desire of humans that does have the effect. I'm of the school that believes that the universe is the mathematical sum of the intentions of all sentient beings, whether they're conscious that they're conscious or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so thus, those that are awake, those of us that sort of know what's going on and are self-aware in more than one way, we can use our intention on purpose. And as we concentrate and increase our ability to understand what effect we're having and how long we have to push or wish or desire, we begin to have an effect on the physical universe. We can have no other choice.
Yes, I believe that's true. And you know, it's like destiny and chaos, you know, like you were saying, asking me about destiny and choice. Well, I think destiny, choice, and chaos all work together. You know, we have our destiny, we have our path, we have our journey, okay, and then we make our choices down this path and journey. We're going to still get to that same point of our destiny, but along comes chaos, other people's journeys, you know, and they cross our paths and create these moments of chaos in our learning experience called life.
Right.
And you know, so the way I see it is it's really the it all. It's not any one thing, you know. It's a combination. Yes, my choices make a difference in my path and journey, but my destiny is my destiny.
Yes.
It's just changing the journey. It's changing the road, changing the ride, you know.
Even
it's going to be bumpy.
The destiny itself is by your choice, maybe before you got here. But anyway,
yeah,
Chris,
so now that I'm moving it.
Please send me the pictures and keep me posted. And if you want to make an announcement for your project, definitely, definitely keep X Squared Radio in mind. We'll help you with it all we can.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And I just wanted to let you know that we're doing this grassroots research here on our own, and I have a series of photos that show when we first come out that there's really next to nothing here, and as we're calling them in, they start accumulating and accumulating. And
oh, that's excellent.
I'm talking far beyond just the regular orbs and then these EBLFs. We have all types of plasma-type beings and string orbs, and it's just unbelievable. I'm going to send you a variety of pictures, and
yeah,
if you'd like to post them on your site. But in about a month, we'll be launching Experiencers Forum. And like I said, it's going to be very interactive. It's going to be an open discussion forum. It's going to be an e-zine. It's going to be a case study newsletter once a month as well. And I'll be sending the invites out to all the great minds, all the great people that are doing the research and helping to get this all out there. And
do you have a website that people can go to? You have a website we can put out to sort of help you.
We'll be launching in about 3 or 4 weeks. It'll be experiencersforum.com. And like I said, that's experiencers forum, forum.com. And it'll be launching in about a month, and we'll be sending out promos and some of these small slide videos and so on, so that everybody can get the idea and the concept and go to the site and see if it's something
Perfect.
You want to be a part of.
Perfect. We'll help when we can, I promise.
Make sure you get back with me, Brooke.
Right before you go live with it, let me know again by email, and we'll do a plug for you.
Most excellent, most excellent. And I will be sending over some pictures to you probably tomorrow.
Very good. Thanks so much for the call.
Take care, Brooks. Have a good night.
Thank you. All right, my friends, X Squared Radio has got open lines tonight. Let me go ahead and announce the phone numbers one more time here. That's not my busy line. That's theirs. All right, here we go. Toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 877-270-8714. Anywhere toll-free in Canada, 888-228-4494. And a direct line, anywhere that you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us. We have two lines, 530-413-4511 and 530-413-4515. And those numbers are good anywhere on the planet. If you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, whether you're off planet or even inside the planet, you'll be able to reach us. So, and our Instant Messenger board, if you want to reach us that way, is AOL Instant Messenger. My call sign is Vision Officer. We've got about a half a dozen folks in there right now, and they're sending me questions to ask the guests and ideas of their own. Very informed listeners all.
Hello?
I also... yes, do I have a caller on the line? Where are you calling from, and your first name, please?
Hi, my name's Jared. I'm from New York. I'm your instant messenger buddy, Lupin is Burning. I've been chatting with you throughout the whole first hour.
Excellent.
So here I am.
the keyboard takes a voice. That's good. Did you say your name was Dave?
Jared.
Jared, okay, I'm sorry. Studio was trying to match your volume level and missed the first name. Well, you are certainly an informed IMer, and I greatly appreciate it. You saved my bacon a couple of times because you know so much about these energy orbs. So it seems that this subject is really taking life. I have some friends out there who started, maybe last November, December, something like that, started shooting some pictures, and every once in a while they get an orb. And now they call me about every 10 or 12 days going, oh my gosh, I just got like 50 orbs in my living room. It seems like the whole earth is getting flooded by these, and it's, even me, I take engineering pictures all day, and interesting that I would get an orb too, even.
Our energy, as I told you on the chat that no one else probably heard, is that's the reason they'll come up in pictures. You'll get your pictures of a few girls standing next to each other, taking a school picture, and you'll get orbs all over the place, because basically what it is, the camera seeing energy. And I don't know all the technical stuff, but basically it's the camera seeing the energy, and the energy could be anything. It could be someone's aura, it could be someone's guides, it could be a ghost, it could be a spirit, it could be anything, as long as it's not on our plane of our visual plane, or what we can perceive. Well, some people can perceive.
Well, here's what I find interesting. Some of my friends have done a rather scientific study of orbs, and I witnessed some of this sitting in an area surrounded by 40 or 50 people, and it's about 50 degrees, and it's at night, and it's outside, and My friend Michal goes out in the middle of the circle, and he's explaining to people that he's got a camera on a tripod, and it's going to take a picture every 10 seconds for a minute. So it's going to shoot 6 pictures. As soon as he pushes the button, it's going to wait about 10 seconds and take the first one. And he explains to us what he's going to do. In the first frame, he just blanks his mind, just completely empty. And then after the first flash, he begins to fill his heart with kind of a loving feeling. He projects it out. And he continues that for about 40 seconds, and then he backs off and goes back to a blank mind. When you look at the series of pictures, it's absolutely stunning what comes up. In the first frame, it's just black with him, just him lit up in the darkness. In the second frame, you see a few orbs coming in.
That he gets the pictures where he says, just leave me alone for a minute, and he says, okay, and then you take the picture, and there's a million orbs around them, and they'll take a picture, you know, 10 minutes, a few seconds later, and there'll be nothing there. You have control over them.
Yeah, now,
I'm
wondering...
It's not really control, it's control over your own energy.
I was wondering, and so was he, you know, do they come in because of us, or are we, extending ourselves? Are these energy aspects of ourselves? And
well,
so what he started to do.
I'm sure you're a scientist. You can tell that everything's made of little tiny atoms, quarks, you know, whatever the hell you want to call them, and they vibrate and they put off energy or light under my what I think of everything. And everything's based off of intent. I'm sure you've heard that in tons of studies and, you know, mystery schools, whatever you want to call them, you know. Everything's based off of intent. What you feel, what you think is what's projected into our reality and, you know, what shows up, what you think would show up. Or it's all related to the superconscious, really, you know, the part of the mind that we're all trying to access that we've been blocked off from, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and there are the dimensionally blind who just don't see orbs, don't think about them. And even when I was in Tibet, when I went into the Maitreya Buddha shrine there in Lhasa, what I found hanging from the ceiling were these little glass orbs, and you can see them in the video that we produced. And I asked the monks, you know, what are those up there? And, of course, my translator asked, and he came back and said, I think they're planets. And I said, no, they're not planets. Ask the question a different way. And finally he came back, he said, well, I don't really know how to explain this. They're kind of energy balls. I said, yeah, we call them orbs. So evidently what it is...
physical
is
or the ones in the pictures?
Oh, these are physical. And what they do is they hang them from
the
ceiling
glass.
By fishing line. Yeah, like little glass Christmas
mm-hmm.
ornaments.
Because
different sizes.
They catch light, and the monks that are very, you know, spiritual and open to all these energies, everything is light, like I said before. And, you know, even what we're talking right now, the radio waves are on a frequency, right? And what they do is when they put a huge, you know, glass sphere or crystal sphere, you know, it bends the light, and it bends the light around them, and they're... spiritual, I don't know what you call them, spiritual, you know, energy. They can work with energy. They, you know, constantly, you know, go out of their bodies and do all that other stuff. And basically what it does is it has an effect for them, kind of like a feng shui effect where you place something in a certain area and it'll produce a certain energetic effect, you know, to what you would like it for, you know. And if they said they're planets, they're obviously, you know, that's probably their home on the stars, really, and they're helping, like, giving it a physical manifestation within their temple that helps them continue with their work in this dimension.
Well, that could be. It could be one of the answers, but let me tell you what this monk told me. He said that, you know, we get pilgrims from all over the country. I mean, they actually walk there, even from China, to come to this shrine and basically dump the worries of their lives on this statue of Maitreya Buddha and walk out with what they call the torch of victory. But they're dimensionally blind. They can't see the orbs, and these Tibetan monks actually call them higher masters for some reason. And what they do is they hang glass balls there for the pilgrims. So when the pilgrims come in, they can actually see that the higher masters are there and that they care about them. The monks, however, can see the orbs without the glass balls hanging there.
Well,
you know, we,
like
you
I
and
said,
I, you and I have to have digital cameras to see them.
Well, I have a friend that sees energy. She sees it, you know, without, she can't turn it off, basically. You know, there are a lot of people out there. I'm sure some of your listeners have some sort of psychic ability that they can't turn off. I mean, I have my own. I got tons of crap going in my head that I couldn't turn off unless I go to sleep, which I'm pretty sure just makes it even worse. I'm just unconscious and I work with it.
Oh, my goodness. I think that's when mine turns on, unfortunately.
Exactly. Everyone's got it at a certain point. And I've told you over the internet and certain things is that we all leave our bodies when we go to sleep. That's we go to our dream bodies, or we go to an astral body, or we go to a higher body, or some of us return, some of us go straight to our soul bodies, you know, and there's, you know, different people go different places. And personally, I have memories going into the inner earth, the whole place that you're trying to get to. And I'm pretty sure you've had guests or talked to people that have visited there, actually, or clairvoyants, you know, remote viewing, have seen inside or seen, you know, whatever. It's really hard to explain in words.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. And, it you know, it's exciting, and it piques my curiosity in a way that I can't hardly describe. Because if they're here, and if they are these other dimensional, intelligent, sentient beings who are trying to communicate with us, then I'm really challenged to try to learn to communicate with them. Now, my friend Michal has figured out how to ask them yes and no questions, and he gets answers, and he's being guided by it. Yeah.
It's a whole form of divination. I mean, all you really need is a pendulum, you know, tie something heavy to a string that's evenly balanced, write yes or no on a paper, and hang it over. And, you know, that's one of the most basic ways to get answers from the spirit realm or the higher realms, you know, whoever you want to receive yes or no answer guidance from. And that's a trick anyone out there can do. Anyone that wants to communicate with their guides listening right now, all they have to do is go get your house key, you know, or something. And a lot of people use crystals. I have tons of them. You know, put it on a string and put it on a chain, write yes or no on a paper, and hold your pendulum over it. And, you know, ask the questions in your mind, let the pendulum start up, and you'll be surprised what kind of results you get.
Well, I've kind of watched that from time to time, and I watched a guy ask questions about the Mayan pilots, he calls them, UFO ships that are coming here to gather up all the Mayan people. And I thought maybe I'm a little incredulous when it comes to this kind of stuff, because you're actually holding the key. Now, what would happen if you had a little tripod or something, and you put the key and it was hanging over the piece of paper without you holding on to it? And then if the key moved, I'd be in the camp of believers at that point.
Well, that wouldn't be totally impossible, although I'd personally say you'd have to get someone that knew what they were doing and that could establish a connection on an energetic level. Otherwise, it'd be really hard to move the physical object. I don't know if you know anything about telekinesis. It's not exactly easy unless you're trained to do it. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, we used to flip...
Many people hold a pendulum and change it with their mind. You know what I'm saying? But
Well, we used to flip styrofoam cups off the coffee table with our minds just for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone possesses psychic ability or talent, or, you know, it's all within us, because we're all of Godhead, the source, creator. You know, we all come here, and, you know, we're all equal on a soul level. Everyone's not equal on an incarnate level, or at least that's my belief, but on a soul level, we're all equal. We all have the same potential eventually. But even in the teachings of Jesus Christ, you know, Buddha said, you know, everyone can be the Buddha, anyone can be the Jesus, and anyone can be the Master. All you have to do is, you know, put the intent out for it and work for it.
Yeah, really. I mean, Jesus, when he came here, he didn't establish a church. In fact, he was kind of upset with the church. He gave us two basic commandments. Love God. Love yourself. Just love yourself. You love yourself, everything's going to fall into place, okay?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's the basis of almost actually every religion or spiritual teaching is if you don't have self-love, you're not really doing it right.
Well, now there's a big difference between religion and spiritual teachings.
That's true. I don't want to get in this conversation because we'll take a whole other hour and a half.
Yeah. That's all right. You're one of my best IMers, and I appreciate you coming on the air. It's not easy to get on global radio and talk to 12 million people, but you're doing just fine.
Yeah, I got a piece of hematite in my hand to calm me down. I can see I'm getting your jitters from having all the people listening in.
Well, I have malachite around my neck. It seems to work okay for me.
It's the same thing. They're both iron.
Well, I'm just a dumb old physicist that happened to stumble onto the... in front front of a microphone one day, and fortunately my producer Don has had enough patience with me and nurtured me along to where he doesn't throw me off the air each week for blowing it. But I try to run a tight board and from hotel room to hotel room as I travel around doing my engineering work, we do the best we can. We're up here in eastern Washington building a biodiesel plant right now.
Biodiesel, that was last week's show, right?
Yeah, that was last week's show with the great Joe LaStella, unbelievable man. Oh, my gosh.
I'd love to
when you think about
the
electric car, you say, wow, where is this guy? How come you left him out? He set 3 world records while you guys were shooting the silly film. Well, all right, my friend. How's the weather in New York right now?
It's starting to get cold, man. The seasons are messed up because of global warming and the pole shifts and earth changes and consciousness. And we had spring last year. Spring didn't come until right around about a week or two before summer was supposed to get here, so it's just starting to get cold now, which is on track, but hopefully
well, it's been in the low 20s all week, but it's actually real comfortable outside right now. It's about 48 degrees. I felt like I actually went out in toeless shoes a few minutes ago. I must be really acclimating well. Well, listen, have a good week, and please stay in touch. If you get this website, if you have a website you want to plug or a book or anything you want to write, just make sure to send it to us.
No, but if anyone listening is interested in contacting me, you've said my screen name a few times. It's Lupin is Burning. Is Lupin as in L-U-P-I-N, French word for wolf, is burning and on fire, no misspellings. Feel free to IM me if you have anything interesting to talk about. That's not the best way to get me. I'll be tuned in for the rest of the show, and I'll definitely be on the contact with you on the AIM. So
very good.
I'll
very
throw
good.
My headphones back on and listen to the end of our conversation.
All right, hurry up. You'll catch the last 10 seconds of it. And tell a few friends, and we need some more listeners. Thank you very much for coming on, Jared.
Have a good night.
Okay. Just want to let you know that NASA's Dawn spacecraft has launched on a mission to investigate 2 titans of the asteroid belt. By studying the asteroids Vesta and Ceres, astronomers hope to learn more about how the rest of the solar system formed, including Earth. Dawn lifted off from the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida, U.S., at 12:34 Greenwich Mean Time on Thursday aboard a Delta II rocket. Now, here's the interesting thing. Dawn relies on an ion propulsion system to get to its destinations. Only the second NASA probe to do so. Such engines use an electric field to accelerate electrically charged atoms or ions to high speed, pushing the spacecraft in the opposite direction. They provide far more thrust for a given amount of fuel than conventional rocket engines. I should let you know, Earth explorers, that this technology has been around at NASA, workable,
forever.
Since 1968. And I believe we have a caller on the line. So, caller, could you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Would that be me?
That would be you.
I'm calling from California.
And what was your name?
My name is David.
All right, welcome to the program, David. What's up?
Yeah, thanks. Actually, you just brought up the space stuff or the spaceship thing. I live right by Skunk Works, and they fly a lot of weird stuff around here.
A lot of weird stuff. Now,
yeah.
are you the IMer that asked me the question about the Galactic Federation?
No, I didn't. But you know, that's what drew me to call in because actually, when I was younger. We actually studied that. I did a lot of astral projection, and I lost the talent for some reason when I was about 25.
So what do you mean you lost the talent? You just forgot how, or you didn't do it for a while and lost the ability?
No, something happened. I was astral projecting one night, and I went somewhere I guess I wasn't supposed to, and it scared me pretty bad. And every time that I feel I'm going into the state, like the vibrations and stuff, I pull myself out of it, and it's almost a panic, too. so something, and I can't remember. I just remember a door slamming, but I don't. It was weird, but I can't do it anymore. And I,
now, when you astral projected before, you say that you traveled consciously. Did you have a same place that you started from every time? Like, did you have a meadow or a chair or a tree or a beachfront that you went to and you started out each time, or did you go someplace different each time?
Actually, I was able to do it right from where I was. A couple times I was able, I don't know where I actually went, but I can't confirm it, but I actually felt like I walked with Saint Germain and Christ at one time somewhere, and we had a talk, and then it wasn't short after that, I astral projected again, and then I was brought, but I couldn't do it anymore. I don't know, it was weird. I feel like I did something wrong, and I need to get it right again. But no, wherever I started
maybe,
from,
maybe you didn't do
there.
Anything wrong. Maybe you didn't do anything wrong. And I really don't want you to have that kind of feeling that you can't do it because you did something wrong. That's kind of a self-perpetuating negative trap you might fall into. You know, sometimes when we project our energy out into the universe, it's a little bit like sending an echo out across the canyon. You might get the echo back, but then you might also resonate with something else and get a different form of energy back. And it's all about listening. Sometimes we get used to one form of energy coming back to us, and then the energy shifts. And then we're not used to it, or we can't recognize it, we don't hear it or see it anymore. And all of a sudden we find that that a different form of energy is coming to us. We think we've lost the ability, but in actuality our resonance with the universe has raised a notch, and it's up to us to learn how to listen to that new frequency. Have you thought about that?
You know, as you're saying it, it's coming. It makes sense, total sense. It does. You're absolutely right, and that's probably why. I mean, because I guess the frequencies are changing. Well, they're always changing, but I feel like I'm tapping into something, but I can't really put my finger on it right now. But I feel more of it all again. I just don't.
Well, what's the emotion that you feel? Do you feel at peace? Do you feel confused or energized or fearful?
Sometimes all at the same time, especially this day and age. But I feel like I'm more in touch than I was before. Just in the past couple of years, it's slowly come back. I feel I'm more in touch with just everything around me. I'm more aware again. I don't feel like I'm locking in the dark like I was for such a long time.
Well, so you don't feel in the dark. You feel like...
I feel like I'm coming back into the light again, finally.
Right. Like you're stepping into the light. Exactly the feeling. That's what I was trying to put into words. So, and when you're in the light, you feel a lot less fearful, and you're much more in control over how you react to your environment. In other words, your boss can't make you mad anymore because you realize that you are the one that make you mad, not anyone else, right?
I've always known that. I've been in sales for 22 years. I have control of my own emotions. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, that's where you go then. I mean, it isn't about sometimes fitting into society or into society's rules. It's more of coming into synchronicity with the universe. What's your ancient purpose, what's your reason for coming here, your reason for experiencing this life? Many people can, they can fall into despair because they just feel like, you know, this life is miserable and they really aren't getting out of it the joy and happiness that they wanted to. But you got to stop and think that maybe that's the life you designed for yourself. Maybe you already had a couple of lives of total bliss and wealth, and now you want a life of challenge and overcoming, you know, internal weaknesses of your own, and that's definitely a challenge, probably the biggest one of existence, don't you think?
I agree. I just, I'm having fun with it right now. It's an exciting time to be alive, heck.
Isn't it, though? It is a great time to be alive. I mean, here, I can sit in a hotel room in Eastern Washington, and I can talk to people all over the world, and their voices can be heard all over the world for free, unfettered, without any governing agency telling us what we can or cannot speak about, and and because of BBS Radio, that is made possible. For my money, it's one of the best networks out there. I've been with them for a long time and intend to stay. Just for that reason, because people like you are getting access. And that's what it's all about.
Quest, Arne, actually, you bring that up about talking and the internet radio. And this, I found you guys. I was actually, I was on the coast to coast. Somehow I got to your link. I was just kind of sitting here. But actually, I don't know if you've heard of the new resolution, H.R. 1866, or no, 1966?
No, I haven't.
It's a horrible one. It actually is called for homegrown domestic terrorism, and the way they define it, it could be anybody. It's worse than the Patriot Act, and they're attacking the internet. They say the internet's one of the main things that'll actually spread this new problem of ours, of homegrown terrorism.
Oh, well, yes, but you know, a few bad apples do spoil the bunch. So I honestly think that the internet is not controllable. It's not centralized. There are many, many servers everywhere, and even private ones. I do know of one oil rig in the North Sea that stopped producing oil about 20 years ago, and they were threatening to demolition it. And the darn thing's huge. I mean, it houses 6,500 people. It's about 35 floors above the sea. And one of the dukes, one of the royals in the UK, bought the darn thing, paid for it with gold, and he turned it into a sovereign country. And then he connected it to the internet. And it is, because of its sovereign nature, absolutely impenetrable as far as making people, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who want to remain private buy a house there on the oil rig, and they live there and run their business there, and they have to go to and from by helicopter or by ship or by boat or whatever, but it's out there in the middle of the North Sea, so I happen to know that internet is here to stay.
Cool.
Anyway, well, that's what we want to be, is free, and we want to be a free and open people. And honestly, I believe the key to peace is the internet, because it allows people to communicate from all over the world, and communication drops the barriers of prejudice and fear that build up between nations. And I think it would just be incredibly entertaining, if nothing else, if the leaders of one nation jumped up on their little soapbox one day and said, I think we're going to have a war today, and nobody shows up.
That's true.
The leader can just go ahead and announce his war, and nothing is going to happen, because the people are informed, and they know what's going on, and they know how to take care of themselves, and they know how to treat each other, and they know how to communicate with one another, and slowly but surely, I honestly believe this, we are making the shift to becoming earthlings instead of nations.
One big sea of consciousness.
Well, that's what I'm hoping will happen. If not conscious living humans, then maybe a combination of off-worlders and inside-worlders and humans, if that's what it takes. But it can be done. I know this. I've seen it done somewhere in the past of my lives, and I know it can be done again. So, anyway, I greatly appreciate you coming on the phone with us, David. You've been a great addition to our program tonight, and you'll be now immortalized in the archives. All right, well, I guess did we lose David? Okay, I guess we lost David. So we're now seeking for another caller. I do have an IMer out there that's talking about the Galactic Federation, wants to know whether it is of the light or of the darkness, and I'm curious to talk about that. I don't know a whole lot about the Galactic Federation, but when somebody comes IMing in talking about it, it's a cinch. They know a little bit more about it than I do. We have about 11 minutes left in this hour, so if you want to call in toll-free, the number anywhere U.S. is 877-270-8714. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free. We do get a lot of calls from Canada, 888-228-4494. And anywhere else on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-413-4515 or 530-413-4511. We are talking to Bob Curran, who is the author of a book that's coming out. In fact, he sent me a copy of it, and it's about ancient lore. I'll give you the title of it in our next hour, but we are talking with him about coming on the program. He's excited about it. He lives in Northern Ireland, so there's going to be a little bit of a time differential for him, and we've got to give him a little preparation because it'll be like, you know, 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning for him. But we will we'll have patience with that. And it's one more item in the news, and we've got quite a bit of it to cover tonight, but please do call in and keep the IMs coming. We do have a lot of people talking about orbs. We have really delved deep into it. And by the way, if you want to know more about it, how to take pictures of it, what it means, where they come from, what kind of research has been done into it, Beyond Words Publishing is introducing a new book called The Orb Project. It's written by Nihal Ledwith. It's got some great forewords in it. And it is being launched this week. In fact, it's being released in New York this weekend. And we want you to get out there and get that book. It's just a little book, but it's packed with information. A lot of experience and research went into this book. If you know Nihal Ledwith, you know his background. He's an absolutely impeccable human being and a good friend, so make sure you get out there and pick that up. Did ancient oceans on Venus last long enough for potential life to have emerged? The answer could be locked inside a hardy mineral called tremolite, which future robotic missions to our neighboring planet could find and study. Wouldn't you like to have a crystal of tremolite in your collection? The surface of Venus today is extremely dry and hot enough to melt lead. But there is evidence that the planet was much cooler and wetter in the past, before a runaway greenhouse event probably evaporated any oceans the planet had. In fact, previous research has suggested that the formation of clouds could have slowed this greenhouse effect, allowing oceans to survive for 2 billion years or more. For half of its lifetime, Venus could have been a habitable planet with liquid water oceans. How about that? That comes from planetary scientist David Grinspoon of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science in Colorado. If so, now this is very curious, chunks of rock ejected by asteroid or comet impacts could have shuttled living organisms between Earth and Venus, he says. Earth life could have been transplanted to Venus, and it would have landed on a wet planet, he told New Scientists. Conversely, it's even possible that Earth life came from Venus. Now, that's pretty interesting. I know some friends who are pretty sure that they're Venusians, or at least come from Venus, and if you read anything about Lemuria, you'll know that some of those ancient generations reportedly left this planet and went to Venus. How about that? That bright star just above Regulus at dawn. Go out and look at it tomorrow morning. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
How you doing? This is Ramon from New York.
Hi, Ramon. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I actually have two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one was, I had this strange dream. Basically, I was in a lab. I'm not a scientist. And I saw these forms of molecules, and they were all, like, kind of burgundy.
Uh-huh.
And in a square shape. And who walked into the lab was the person who was in charge of the extradition. I forget his name. The
Stephen
person that
Curry?
Passed away.
Stephen Curry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he came in, he looked at it, and he was shocked. And when I woke up, I was asking myself, like, what is it? What is it? And all I heard in a different voice in my head was carbon 14. And since you're a physicist, I was just wondering about that.
Well, carbon, as you know, if you look at the periodic chart, you'll see the atomic weight of carbon. But it is actually the mean carbon weight. There is a normal distribution of carbon weight. And carbon 14 is an energized form of carbon that's formed during events of cosmic radiation. It sort of blasts into the Earth, adds a couple of neutrons to normal carbon, and it has more neutrons than normal. But it does hang around for a while, and it decays at a very predictable rate. We call that a half-life. Well, the interesting thing about carbon is we eat it in the form of cellulose and fruit and vegetables and all that stuff. Well, when we eat it, it becomes part of our body. And then if our body should happen to die, that carbon begins to decay. If our body is exhumed 25,000 years from now and it happens to be intact, or at least, you know, mummified or fossilized somehow, they can grab some of that carbon and they can check the ratio of regular carbon against this carbon 14. The ratio will give them the age of that person, or at least the time from the time of their death to the time they were discovered. Now, there's a couple flaws in the theory. One is that carbon 14 decays at a fixed rate. And the other is that there's a fixed amount of carbon-14, fresh carbon-14, at any given point. Both of those are assumptions that now appear to be somewhat flawed. Not too flawed. I mean, you can't nail the age of someone down to, say, 100 years, but you can get it pretty close, say, within 1,000 or 5,000 years, and that seems to be pretty reasonable. But carbon, it's interesting that you see that shape, because carbon has recently been engineered. There was a scientist whose name was Buckminster, and he devised a way of building things out of carbon atoms. We call them buckyballs or bucky tubes now. Now we use nanotechnology, where we actually take a scanning tunneling microscope or an atomic force microscope, and we push protons together to make molecules, to make atoms out of other protons. It's a very interesting science called nanotechnology. Interestingly enough, some of the sacred geometries that are seen when they do this are squares and cubes, just like your vision.
Okay.
So does that give you enough information?
Yeah, it gave me information. It was just weird that I saw in a dream. Like I was saying, it was in the square form. I have heard of what you're talking about in the sense of that they were thinking of making an elevator to space by using the nanotube technology, which I think I saw on Discovery Channel one time.
Nanotechnology is pretty fresh. Dr. Kim Drexler was the first one to get a degree in it. He actually combined engineering and physics to get a combination degree in nanotechnology at MIT. So he was the first to do it. Really interesting what he did. Clinton was president at the time, and there was a contest going on to see who could build the smallest electric motor. Well, the guy that won did build an electric motor that ran, and he had to look through a microscope to see it run. So Kim Drexler goes to the White House, and he shows an electron microscope video to President Clinton of a sun gear that he had built that was made out of 4,555 sodium atoms. Now that's small.
Wow. My second question, really quickly, was whenever I meditate, I kind of see like this, I want to describe it in an orb, but in the center, there's like a black hole, and I can see the energy like swirling around it. And it's almost like the energy is going into the hole. From some of the videos I've seen on Google, they say that's how the UFO spaceships travel. But I was just curious about that.
Well, I am curious about it, too. The one story that was related to me recently, one of the guys that works for our company spent a good part of his youth in a Russian prison camp. He's 6'4", and when he came out, he weighed 90 pounds, so you can see what a survivor this guy is.
Wow.
Well, he gets out, and he makes a job out of deep-sea diving, and he specializes in New York Harbor, and his job that he became very good at was salvaging German U-boats that were scuttled at the end of the war when their crews came, you know, the war was over, and they didn't want to go through the hassle of immigration and all that. They wanted to sort of infiltrate. They would take their U-boats, come into New York Harbor, jump off the boat, and scuttle the submarine and sink it. So this guy got very good at going down to the bottom of murky New York Harbor and finding these subs. So he goes out one day with the ship and his wife. She dumps the cables overboard, and over he goes. He has about 1 hour of air. 4 hours go by, and she is sure she has lost her husband. They are frantic trying to find him. All of a sudden, he comes to the surface, swims over to the edge of the boat, throws his tanks into the boat. He has only used 15 minutes of his air. Well, they ask him, where in the heck have you been? You've been gone for 4 hours. He said, I know. I dropped to the bottom. I started swimming over toward what I thought was a submarine sitting on the bottom, and I seemed to swim through a wall, and I ended up face down in the mud in an open-air area. I peeled off my mask, and I could breathe, and sitting right there before me on the bottom was a flying saucer. So while he's looking at the craft, three beings come out and telepathically communicate with him, and he doesn't threaten them at all, so they invite him into the craft, and he sees their propulsion system. So this friend that of mine who is interviewing him says, okay, did you remember what it is you saw? Now, fortunately, my friend is a very accomplished engineer, and he described what he saw as the propulsion system. It was a small pool of water, and over the water was a cone of special metal, and inside this cone of metal were all these little angular surfaces. And evidently what they would do is they would spin this cone, which would draw the water up into the cone and stress it like cavitation. And evidently stressing the water molecule made an anti-gravity field which lifted the craft. Well, fortunately, my friend's an engineer, and he decided to build one. So after many, many experiments, he finally got one built. He built it out of an old bronze and brass water pump. So he mounts a motor to it, turns the motor on, and it's an AC motor. It runs for about 45 seconds, and the motor burns up. But the motor is freezing cold. So he said, well, no problem, that's an AC motor, I'll put a DC motor on it. He put it on, it lasted for about 1 minute, and the motor burned up, but it was ice cold. So he finally changed his design. He put a clear faceplate on the pump. Now, the pump didn't pump water out and in, it just stirred it around on the inside. He puts water jugs out on the floor about every 10 feet, ties a wristwatch to the water jug and a voltmeter inside where the leads are down in the water jug. And he has these going out of his house across the street to a neighbor's house across the street, and he puts a big motor on this pump. He starts it up, and it runs for about 4 or 5 minutes. And the friends that are with him say, hey, all these voltmeters that are on the water jugs, they're pegged out. Something is happening. You need to shut this thing down. It ran for about 15 minutes, and he shut it off. The watches, starting 10 feet away, were different times. And these watches at one time were all synchronized. And something was happening. He was beginning to open something with that machine of his. He took it apart, tried to reduplicate it, and he could never do it again. Now, that's pretty interesting, don't you think?
Wow, yes.
So the secret might be in our very unique molecule of water. Stressing that molecule may have an effect on time. Just to give you another part of the story, in Norway, when the fjords freeze, okay, they're like glaciers, in the summertime, they thaw. Sometimes the ice forms a dam. And what happens is the warm water of the ocean melts away the ice, and you get this big old wall of ice, and behind it you got all this water backed up, right? So this geologist knows that this dam is about to break any day now because it's getting warm, it's summertime, so he takes his camera and he mounts it to a tripod, and he sets it up on the fjord, and he's waiting. Day after day he waits for this ice dam to break. All of a sudden, this huge noise, and the ice dam breaks. Now, you've got more water than spills over Niagara Falls in a week, moving in just a few seconds. He said, now he's up on the hill, he feels like he's about to die, and his whole body begins to phase. His hair, his hands, the grass, all the bushes around him get a blue plasma covering them. It lasts for 2 or 3 minutes as this wall of water moves by him. Then the blue aura, the blue haze goes away, and he feels an incredible feeling of euphoria. His whole body was elevated by this experience. Now, that's another example of water being stressed. Is maybe that what you're talking about, Ramon?
To be honest with you, usually when I meditate, I always feel better doing it in the shower. You know, like I'll finish taking a shower, then I'll sit down and just let the water hit me on the head, and it always makes me feel better, and it's easier for me to clear my head. So,
do you ever see a blue haze or a blue plasma around you?
No, it's usually like a, almost like a clear yellowish that I kind of
like a gold
see inside my head. Yeah, like I see in my head when I close my eyes. I don't see it around me. As soon as I open my eyes, it's gone.
Wow. Very interesting stuff. So where are you in New York? Are you in the city, or are you out in the outskirts, or?
No, I live in Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan.
I've actually recently applied for your expedition.
Very good. So your name is in the database?
Yes.
Very good. Very good.
I still haven't sent the mini tape that you asked for, which I will be sending tomorrow. But the application I sent through email.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Well, Ramon, I appreciate the call. We are a little bit over time, so I've got to...
Thank you very much.
I got to pay some bills, but I am so glad that you came on the program. And please call in again and tell your friends, all right?
Okay, have a good one.
Thanks, Ramon. Talk to you later. All right, Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio, Hour 2 in the can. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes with more X Squared Radio. Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Earth Explorers, how happy we are, grateful we are that you are out there listening all around the world, calling in tonight. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. It's a little frosty outside, but it's warm in here where you can reach us. Listen, phone lines have been open the whole 3 hours because we've just had open lines, so we do want you to call in toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 877-270-8714. Anywhere toll-free in Canada, 888-228-4494. And our direct line, and you can reach us anywhere on-planet or off-planet. If you can reach a cell phone tower, you can reach us at 530-413-4515 or 530-413-4511. So give us a call. We've had a lot of calls tonight, a lot of subjects. Another item of news, a Japanese spacecraft carrying two baby probes launched into space on Friday called Kaguya. It is the most advanced spacecraft sent to the moon since the Apollo missions in the 1970s. formerly known as Selene, or Selenological, an engineering explorer, Kaguya, is named after a character from a Japanese legend who travels to the moon. It blasted off aboard an H-11A rocket at 10:31 Japanese time from the Tanegashima Space Center in Japan. Now, the interesting thing about this is the spacecraft is designed to release two small 50-kilogram probes, that's about 100 pounds, into their own orbits around the moon. The trajectories of all three craft will be precisely measured to build up a detailed map of the moon's gravity field. The main spacecraft is equipped with a wide variety of instruments, including ground-penetrating radar, that will investigate the moon's structure down to a few kilometers below the surface. We know a little something about ground-probing radar here. In the early 80s, did lots of experiments with ground-probing radar in the oil and gas industry. It helped pay for part of my college education. And the technology that we developed was very, very precise. We could locate petroliferous zones down to 5,000 feet with an accuracy of 12 inches, and we could tell the thickness of the zone within 12 inches, and we could tell the porosity of the petroliferous zone within 0.5% before the hole was drilled, much to the chagrin of Halliburton, who had come out to some of the wells to verify our findings with their gamma-ray neutron scanning. In our last hour, we talked about water stressing technology, and one of my IMers, Lupin is Burning, who was on our program by phone earlier, says that this is Arcturian water technology. So if there are any other listeners out there, scientists, experimenters, inventors, who know something about this Arcturian water technology where the water molecule itself is stressed in significant volumes to create an anti-gravitational field. Evidently, this was reported by a diver who stumbled across a spacecraft on the bottom of the New York Harbor while he was looking for German submarines. And I also want to send another message out to Peter, who is listening somewhere in eastern Washington State. Before you go to bed tonight, you might want to call in to X Squared Radio. We've got about 40 minutes on the air, and we'd love to hear from you. It is toll-free, and you can use a cell phone, no problem. And if you have free long distance, as most people do with their cell phones on the weekend, give us a call, 530-413-4515. I have a lot of questions from the IMers about moon bases. And this is what really is curious about the Japanese space probe. Of all the things that you could go to the moon and study, this is the most advanced technology that's been launched to orbit the moon since the Apollo missions. Now, I don't know if you remember those or not. Some of you are too young. But I remember in 1969 when the first man stepped on the moon, and then how almost passé it became about men going to the moon. It seemed like we were doing it every month. It was Apollo 1 and 2 and 13 and 19, and oh my goodness, it was just a whole slew. In actuality, there are only 12 sets of footprints on the moon, okay? And 11 of them are made by Eagle Scouts. Just to let you know how small the fraternity is of people that have actually been to the moon. We just don't do much with it anymore. But it's very interesting that since the idea or the realization that there are bases on the moon that have been photographed with high-resolution cameras and then airbrushed out by NASA technologists, it has piqued several nations' curiosity. So I ask the question, with Japan's ability in microelectronics and their ability to pull together science and focus it in a project like this, why would they go after the gravitational mapping of the moon, and why would they go after ground probing radar that can see a few kilometers below the surface? I can tell you that ground probing radar is fully capable of finding several things. First, water. Easy to do. That frequency is not so hard to see. The second, open air caves and fissures in the ground. These are easy to find too. It's one of the great ways of finding oil in the ground, is finding these magnetic fissures with your radio and then going after the methane and ethane drive and the radon migration around it. But I can tell you that they would not be going after the subsurface aspects of the moon if it weren't for a good reason. Somebody knows something, and rumors are that's, oh, wait a minute, one of my IMers wrote, rumors are that they were kicked off by aliens. That's why we have not been back to the moon. Any of you out there believe that, we took samples and rocks and dirt and different things on the moon and then came back because the aliens were running us off, go ahead and call us in or keep sending those IMs. One of my IMers says, the government and NASA will not let Japan release their findings as far as the buildings on the back of the moon goes. You know, a lot of people don't know that the dark side of the moon is actually not the dark side of the moon. The side of the moon that faces us has an albedo of 10%. Now, the albedo is the amount of energy that a planet reflects back out into space. The moon reflects about 10% of its energy back out into space. So a full moon, although pretty bright, is pretty dim. However, the far side of the moon, the side of the moon that never faces us, because the moon revolves on its axis exactly once every 28 days, oh, it happens to be the same rate at which the moon orbits the Earth. Therefore, the same side of the moon faces the Earth all the time. The far side of the moon has an albedo of 60%. That's right. 60% of the sun's energy is reflected back out into space by the far side of the moon. And if you look at the crater formations on the side of the moon that faces us, they're very large and very quiet. But on the other side of the moon, there are millions of tiny little craters, but not so many big ones. Now, the interesting thing about the dark covering, and many of us believe that it's an iron dust or some kind of dark matter that covers the side of the moon that faces us, we have a theory where that came from. It's an event astronomers call the black axiom. The black axiom is when the Earth travels through, or actually our solar system travels through the galactic plane. When it does, it crosses through a cloud of dark matter, very small, almost microscopic dust. That dust coats everything that goes through it. Now, the fast-revolving planets like Earth, once every 24 hours, get a pretty uniform coating of these tiny little pellets, but planets that move very slowly, revolve very slowly, get only half covered. Hence, half the moon is covered and half the moon is not. And there are some very large asteroids that display the same thing. Now, the other thing we know about the moon is there's little, if any, atmosphere. Maybe none at all. It may be a perfect vacuum on the surface of the moon. But that doesn't mean that there isn't water. Actually, water makes up a good amount of the molecular basis of the soil of the moon. And many people believe that there are frozen lakes on the opposite side of the moon, that they actually fill in some of the craters. Well, friends, all you need is the H3 that's present in the soil of the moon and water, and you have got a nearly endless supply of energy. Take into consideration as well that the Earth is made of iron and nickel primarily, but the moon is made of titanium and aluminum. These are both very energetic metals and can be used for all kinds of energy work. In other words, the moon is a veritable gold mine of energy, just sitting there in low gravity, ready to use, a mere 250,000 miles from Earth. Sounds like the perfect spaceship, doesn't it? Well, there are many people that believe that. One of my IMers says apparently the moon, deep inside, is made of titanium, sort of metal, and that's exactly right. And you heard Sean David Morton a couple of weeks ago on this program tell the story about, and he has intimate knowledge of this because he has been hanging around these folks his whole life, a piece of space junk dropped by a launching mooncraft of ours struck the planet, the moon, and the moon rang like a bell for over 3 hours. Now, I don't know what you could drop on the Earth to make it ring like a bell, but not much. But to drop a little chunk of aluminum and titanium on the surface of the moon and make it ring like a bell for 3 hours means that there must be some kind of resonance, some kind of bell quality to the moon, in that it might be just one big hollow ball covered with dust. It doesn't seem like the Japanese are going to have to go too far into that crust with their ground-probing radar and their two small 50-kilogram probes and their three spacecraft system that's going to be orbiting the moon. It sounds like somebody is leading the race at finding out what's going on with the moon. And they're not the only ones. The Chinese are heading there. The Russians are heading there. And you heard it yourself. This year, President Bush announced a new race to the moon. That's the kind of thing we get excited about here on X Squared Radio. Those discoveries, if they're made, we're going to bring them to you. Also, I wanted to let you know, our IMers are just lighting it up. Let's see, hang on a second. I'm reading a note here. He definitely believes that the moon is hollow. And one of my other IMers, Lupin is Burning, says the Japanese are going to blow the cover. They're definitely going to let us all know what's going on at the moon. I don't think anybody has a vested interest in keeping this stuff secret, unless we have aliens in the government and they don't want us to know. Like anybody could do anything about it here on this Earth if we discover if the moon is hollow and someone's living there and we have spacecraft traveling back and forth between the moon and Earth, what are we going to do about it? What's to be kept secret about that? The big question is, after 30-something years, why now? Why are we going back now? Why are we spending the money now when we're worried about global warming, we're worried about disease spreading around the world, we're worried about border control? Why now are we going to the moon? Seems interesting. Something is of extreme interest, enough to spend a few $1 billion multinationally to get back there and find out what's going on with our nearest neighbor. Any of you out there have an idea or a thought about that, give us a call, toll free anywhere in the U.S., 877-270-8714, and our direct line, 530-413-4515. If you've got a cell phone, that's a toll free call until 9 p.m. Eastern, so just pick up your phone and give us a call. Tell us what you think about maybe the moon being used as a way station to visit the Earth. Maybe now, maybe back in history, and maybe since the Earth became habitable. Maybe the moon isn't from around here as well. So it's possible, too, that the Japanese have enough financial power to put out the truth if they want to. Now, I can tell you one thing. The Japanese are very interested in this kind of idea because we did a documentary on the Hollow Earth with a joint venture with a Japanese crew down at Global Photo Associates in Torrance, California. That documentary on the Hollow Earth was aired in May of this year in Japan on Nippon Television Network. That happens to be the most popular network in Japan, 5 years running. They have a contest they call the Genes of Galileo Hypothesis Contest. I know it doesn't translate into English too smoothly for us, but this is an extremely popular series in Japan. Our documentary aired and polled a 9.5% share in a market of 125 million people. They estimate some 17 million Japanese watched our documentary on the Hollow Earth. Almost 17,000 of them called in to the station and voted our program number one. That's right, we won first prize in the Genes of Galileo contest with our Hollow Earth theory. So the Japanese people are very interested in this kind of subject. They say so with their dollars, and the Japanese advertisers and the Japanese television networks know it. So trust me, if the Japanese discover anything with this probe called Kyuge, then they are going to probably televise it. And it's kind of interesting that they name their probe after a cartoon character that travels to the moon. It's an ancient Japanese legend. And if you know anything about Japanese anime, it is all based, most of it is based on ancient Japanese stories, and the animation is just striking. If you like to stay up late and watch cartoons with the sound off like I do, you'll enjoy it. The point is that it has got our curiosity up. You know, we are Earth explorers here on X-Squared Radio. This is what we go after, the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. And the moon is of particular interest to us. And trust me, if we could mount an expedition to the moon, we'd be doing it. But I don't think I'd be able to take 100 people. So the expedition to the North Pole is the next best thing. That I can do. Let's see, another IMer. He says he heard the moon was brought here by a very old civilization a long time ago. It is not one of the two moons that was here eons ago. These other moons were destroyed by natural disasters. Hence, the Orion Belt, I believe. Well, it could be. I can tell you this. The age of the moon and the age of the Earth are pretty close to one another. The chemical makeup of the two, however, is quite a bit different. There is a theory based on planetary overspin that the Earth spit out the moon out of the Pacific Basin. It seems to be about the right size to fit. The problem with that theory is planets tend to form in a fairly homogeneous manner. They don't segregate the elements in their crust from one side to the other. After all, they were once one big dust cloud. So it's highly unlikely that aluminum and titanium would have exited the Earth in such high concentration. It is much more likely. Now, by the way, there are two good theories. One, both of these are called capture theory. One is that the Earth was here in orbit, minding its own business, and the moon drifted through space and assumed an orbit around Earth. We actually have some evidence of that out in space. But there are problems with that theory. The moon is very close to us. The moon revolves very slowly around our Earth. So if the moon did meander into our solar system and assume orbit around Earth, there would have been a great perturbation event, believe me. The other problem with that theory is that it doesn't seem to jive with the way the Earth wobbles in our orbit around the sun. However, there's another, more popular theory that the moon was here first, orbiting, minding its own business around the sun. And it's quite possible that the moon, during that time, because of this absolutely optimum distance from the sun, might have been inhabited. And it was the Earth that came by and assumed its orbit around the moon. If you look at the way the moon goes around the Earth, it doesn't work like those little models that you see when you turn the crank in your classroom. Not at all. The moon has a tendency to sort of go back and forth, not around and around the Earth. It is the Earth and its revolution and its movement through the solar system that makes it have that appearance. Mars is the same way. It goes back and forth in its orbit because it's not all flat, you know. Everything isn't lined up the way it's supposed to be. It's not all planar the way you think it is. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. One perturbs the other. The moon perturbs our oceans, pulls them around. But the Earth is now three times the diameter that it used to be. And if you couple that with pretty good evidence that not all the Earth is from around here, that there is a higher vibrational Earth and a lower vibrational Earth that seem to have come together to form one concentric Earth here in this orbit, and that two completely different developed gene sets came together during this time, and the two were close enough in development that they intermingled with one another. We see it in the genetic code. We also read about it in our own ancient texts. There were clearly two creations, clearly two planet Earths, clearly two races of man. One called Higher Adam, one called Lower Adam, one called Man, one called Adam Kadmon. Go into any record you want to read, any ancient record that you can find. Of course, the best thing that you could do, if you really don't want to dig out 40 books, is to go buy the Ark of Millions of Years series, Volume 1 and Volume 2. It clearly explains this for you so that you can understand it. And by the way, there's not a math formula in either of those books. We were told by our publishers that we would cut our readership in half for every math formula we put in the book, so we explain it in pretty understandable terms, and we use texts that are commonly available, although not all of them have been in English very long. Now, as luck would have it, Volume 3 has already gone to the publisher. It's called Unlocking the Secret, and you can pick up a copy of it very, very soon, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and of course, at our online store at x2-radio.com or by going directly to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Now, this book is a little bit unique in the sense that it finishes off the complete, unabridged study of all of the 2012 prophecies. Everything that you need to know that you could get your hands on that's meaningful about the 2012 prophecies left behind for us by ancient civilizations is covered in detail in this book. We crack the Mayan calendar code. We understand and bring forth to you exactly, precisely, what the ancients meant and what they meant to leave for us, what we were meant to understand. The second part of the book gives you the tools to unlock the secret. If you have bought the book called The Secret, authored by Rhonda Byrne, an excellent book, an even more excellent marketing campaign by the publishers at Beyond Words Publishing, pick up the book, Unlocking the Secret, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 3. If you have joined our newsletter, or if you have purchased Volume 1, Volume 2, or our DVD on the Hollow Earth, you're going to get a special offer in the mail that's going to give you a discount when this book comes out. You'll want to be the first to get your autographed copy. The first book we put out became a national bestseller in 90 days. We predict that this Volume 3 will become a national bestseller in 30 days. You can make that happen. You'll be getting the email pretty soon, but if you're not part of our newsletter, be sure to go to x2-radio.com. It's free. We don't ask a lot of questions, but we do send out newsletters from time to time, and it gives you, you know, very important information, very important heads up, and it allows you to stay current on the events that are going on. We also have IAMRs coming back at us. Let's see. I don't want any dead air time, so I'm trying to read and talk at the same time. We're talking about the carbon of the Earth. You could, if you're smart, make something seem as old as the Earth. Well, that's true, but excuse me, we're pretty sure the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, at least most of it. But there is also a component of the Earth that seems to be very young, very high energy. It also expresses a high level of entanglement, not only with itself, but also with the matter that we consume. Now, this is what gets really interesting, because, you know, we're living beings and we eat stuff like carrots and peas and beef and popsicles and drink water. All of those have minerals in them, and some of these minerals are what we call macromolecules. They're giant molecules, half a million molecular weight or larger. Some of them help make up our enzymes, and we make our enzymes ourselves, and these are very large, very specialized molecules, and some of them contain heavy molecular weight atoms. Well, the interesting thing about this kind of molecular biology is it's perfect for entangled energy and entangled particles. What does that mean? It means that we have particles inside of us that are entangled with energy and particles in the Earth. That means that what the Earth is doing, we are feeling. And even more important, what we are doing, the Earth is feeling. What we do as individuals, other individuals feel because of the entanglement with us. The energy level that we intend, whether we're conscious of it or not, has an effect on the Earth, on the other individuals of this planet, and even with individuals of other worlds, because all of these elements were created at the same instant through the same supernova event. So I do want to recognize some of the IMers that are on. If I can read, I have Ramonte 76. He has been very diligent in writing emails tonight. Let's see, he says, Lumerian are from the Earth Lyrans, and they're from Lyra, who are supposedly the Lumerian ancestors, who had to leave Lyra because of the reptilian or alpha draconians. Now, you know, all this is very interesting and fascinating, because it is evident that Earth is kind of an oasis out in space. We're not the only ones that realize that, I can tell you right off. Other races who are out there and advanced enough to be able to travel around and do spectral examinations are doing the same thing we're doing. We're looking for M-class planets. That means we're looking for planets that put off into space the spectrum of water. We know what water looks like. We know what kind of frequency it emanates when it's irradiated by a local star. Those races are looking for the same thing. Now, how much of a signature do you think we make into space being 5/7 water? We put off a big water signature, not an ice ball signature, a liquid water signature into space. Other races see that. And this is an oasis in space. You can go 40 light years in any direction you want. There isn't anything like us. We might have to go 100 light years or 500 light years to find another planet like Earth. We are rare, but we're also very easy to spot. So if there are explorers out there, they're looking for the same signature that we are. And they have the drive systems to be able to push their ships at a quarter light speed, half light speed, five times light speed, or maybe even at the speed of thought. Maybe they can move across vast distances of the universe as easily as an electron moves from dimension to dimension. We know, we suspect that these races are also looking for 3D experiences. That means they need a 3D planet upon which to have this experience. This is the place where we can assert our ability to limit ourselves and to experience things and to create. And it helps them in their ascension process, the same as it helps us. That's what it's all about. All beings in the universe are looking for the path to ascension. It can't be done in spirit form. You can only go so far. So I really have to thank my IMer. He goes by the name AJCoop21. So I don't have people's real names, but what does that matter? AJCoop is certainly enough identification for me. We go by the intelligence that that people are bringing toward us. And this makes perfect sense. That's why we come here. If you don't think so, just look back through history. Look at the beings that have come here. If you're a Christian, if you're a Muslim, if you're a Hindu, Buddhist, Shinto, every single one of those religions believes in the core of their tradition in off-worlders. Off-worlders in the form of angels. Off-worlders in the form of creators. Off-worlders in the form of fallen angels and devils and spirits. All of these are off-worlders. They weren't born here. They're not from around here. Look at Adam. Adam was created, and I definitely believe he had a belly button, which means he wasn't born here. He was born somewhere else and brought here. Come on, people, open your minds a little bit. He was placed into the Garden of Eden, not created in the Garden of Eden. And he lived here who knows how long, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, and then Eve was brought to him. Besides, as Ramonte 76 says, what's the difference between 4D and 5D? Well, I can tell you right now, it's a definite difference in vibrational energy. Also, in 3D, we can only realize one side of a thing at a time. We're limited by distance and time. In 4D, what you really need to do to imagine this is look at art from, say, Picasso, where you see both eyes of a person on the same side of their face, or you see landscapes that to us look kind of twisted. But in four dimensions, that's exactly the way they would appear, because time and distance, time and thus distance, don't have the same meanings in 4D. The difference between four-dimensional and fifth-dimensional, again, is a vibrational shift. Now, it's commonly held in the ancient traditions that 4D is where the angels reside. It's also where fallen angels come from or reside, disembodied spirits, if you will. 5D is the much more celestial realm. It's where the exalted beings go, the exalted masters, gods, and such. And it appears as though there are divisions inside 5D as well. Inside the earth, there is a four-dimensional and a five-dimensional aspect to it. And it may be that you need to reach these levels of vibration to be able to access it. Not so much of a stretch of imagination, I don't think. What we see as 3D world, we really only realize when we're awake, right? But when we're asleep, we're kind of disconnected from time. We're kind of disconnected from distance. The things that we experience when we're dreaming, like those people that say, oh, if you fall off a building and hit the bottom, you die. Well, now, who returned to tell that story? I don't know about you, but I've fallen lots of times in my dream, and I've hit the bottom, and I live to tell about it. So that is definitely a myth busted. You also, when you meditate, you can become disconnected from time. You can easily experience past events. And with a little bit of skill and being able to return with the information, you can experience and remember future events. So, you know, many people believe that this fourth dimension, especially Lupin is burning, he says a fourth dimension would be Middle Earth, and fifth dimension is very much the inner Earth. It very well could be, and I may not disagree with that very much. I'm hoping that we can access these dimensions in our expedition. We do have a caller on the line, so caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please. Hello, caller, are you there? caller, if you're there, give me your first name and where you're calling from.
Oh, hi. It's Crystal from British Columbia.
Hi, Crystal. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes, I'm enjoying it. Yeah,
very
I was
good.
Going to ask you, you were mentioning that Adam had come from someplace else. Did you mean that, like, he came from the first Earth, like as in your book? Because I haven't read it for a couple of years. Ark of the Millions of Years. Did he come from the first? From the
Higher dimensional or higher vibrational Earth. He would be called Higher Adam. He was of
a higher Adam.
Right. A purified energy, a more purified matter, immortal, if you will.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought you meant. And then, but these other beings, like they didn't come from that higher vibrational Earth.
Well, they could
Are there other dimensions within that vibrational Earth?
Yeah, I think so. But they could have come from that higher vibrational. You remember reading in Revelations, for instance, there's a being whose name is Lucifer, and his name is Lightbringer, and he certainly hung around the higher realms. But, you know, we all have our free agency. We all have our ability to choose. And when we make that choice, and, you know, we say here on this program that many are called, but few choose. When you make that choice, then you have to live with the consequences of that choice. And evidently, Lucifer's choices led him to fall and disqualified him for a mortal life on this earth.
Right.
That would have made
him,
I think, quite jealous of those of us who did make the right decision and were able to have a mortal experience here on this world.
Right, okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering, too, if... like when the two Earths are going to separate again, right?
Yes, it does appear that...
I'm just wondering if it's starting to take place now because you hear so many people having these experiences that are seem definitely interdimensional, you know, the orbs. And I'm just wondering if it's sort of starting to, like, shift and then come back again and then, you know what I mean, like sort of like a starting to shake apart. If that might explain all the experiences people are having?
Yeah, you would think it's not all going to be perfect harmony right up to December 21st, 2012. There's going to be some, vibrations that occur as these two Earths go out of phase. You're exactly right, and we're beginning to see the results of it right now.
Yeah, that's what I kind of think.
And we're only 5 years away.
Exactly. Well, I know over the past, let's say, 10 years, I've had quite a few experiences, which I thought were really, you know, exceptional until I got on the internet and I thought, wow, everybody is. And, you know, I mean, it's all over the place.
Isn't that interesting how the energy's pouring out? But tell me about a couple of your experiences.
Well, one of the reasons I got interested in your book, Ark of Millions of Years, is, you know, listening to you read part of it on the, you know, you had it, your an introductory offer, and when you said that the two Earths, there were the two Earths, I thought, geez, you know, when I was a kid, I had a dream that I was on an Earth, but it was a beautiful Earth. I mean, not that this Earth isn't beautiful, but it was, you know, a Earth of light, just like, you know, the higher vibrational place. And I rode my horse into through this big opening that came through the sky, and I landed in this huge ocean of cold water, and I was definitely on this Earth. But I knew I'd come from Earth, but it was a different vibration. And when you wrote that, I thought, oh, that just resonates. That's perfectly what I've always felt. But I never understood how that could be. So, you know, that was a dream experience. And then one time I was walking through a meadow, and I walked into another dimension of the same place, of this beautiful Earth, you know.
Did you happen to look at the sky while you were at this world? What did the sky look like?
And when I actually walked into it, probably about 10 years ago, the sky didn't, everything had its... Oh,
hang on a second, caller. We're trying to let Crystal make her thought. Just hold on. Keep going, Crystal.
Oh, okay. Did I go now?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Oh, everything was just brilliant. I mean, everything had its own energy. There was a, you know, the feeling of oneness. Everything was just all light. Everything had different colors. There was, it was like, I can describe it as being, if there was a heaven, that's what it would be like. The sky didn't have, I don't remember any sun. Everything just had its own light. There was a feeling of just incredible peace. It felt like I didn't have to exert a step. I just was like floating. And
I know exactly what you're talking about. That is a marvelous, marvelous vision.
Yeah, well, it was actually, I really had, you know, I walked, and then when I walked back down, you know, out of the meadow, you know, to go back home, it just, on the same path, it just sort of gradually wore off. But I was,
well, each time when you meditate, do you go back to this same place? Do you go back to the meadow?
Oh, I go back to it all the time. It's a usual walk I would take. It never happened again. And I could never understand what it was, although I've had a few other experiences that weren't quite that great around that area. But I kind of understand now after reading up about it that if you walk through a portal, you have to come back out the same way.
Yeah,
or you
exactly.
Get lost in it. And it's funny because I realized I always stayed on that one path. I went in that way and I came out that way, but it hadn't happened again. But I'm thinking, geez, you know, like with your talking about the two worlds coming apart and going together, I thought, geez, that might have been a phase of them, of me separating into the other world again.
Well, it seems
it didn't
that there
last
are
that long because
there are some,
you know,
precursor events.
Pardon me?
There are some precursor events, some special things that are supposed to happen before this vibration really begins to take off. And I'm not really sure what they are, but I know them when they happen. And I don't know how to explain this, but somehow, I don't know, somehow I think the inner earth and this whole expedition and all the download and everything that keeps coming and coming, I just think it's all involved. I think somehow it's tied together. I don't have a clue how,
yeah,
but someone,
I think so too, and I think
somebody out there does.
Yeah, there might not have been an opportunity beforehand to really go there before. Maybe it's just the time is now because, you know, with the electromagnetic field lessening and
global warming, you get access to the sea.
Yeah,
that we haven't had before.
Yeah, I mean, people seeing orbs. I mean, it might just be the perfect time where now, you know, that would be available for us to, you know, I really feel like things are starting to open up that way for those who are open to it.
Right, right. Well, I understand exactly what you mean. Crystal, I have one other person on the line.
Oh,
I got about
go.
3 minutes to go. If you want to hang on, you can, but let me see if I can get Lupin to give me his thoughts on this Inner Earth expedition. Go ahead, Lupin. Are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I think Crystal's on the line.
Hey.
She's going to listen as well. What have you got?
Cool. You just told me to call in again because I've known about this split or whatever you want to call it between the two Earths for a while now. I've been seeing it in dreams, visions, you know, meditation, whatever. From what I gather and the information that I get, it's supposed to happen sometime next year. And as I told you online, it is ironically around the time that you plan to go up north to the North Pole and try to get into the inner Earth. Let me see if I can try to gather my words about how it's supposed to happen. One of the precursors, as you were saying earlier, or that we've been seeing even, are the great natural disasters, the flooding, the fires, hurricanes, the tornadoes touching down in places that we haven't had tornadoes probably in a few hundred years since the last pole shift, I guess. But what it has to do is, it's basically, I don't know, in the New Age community, it's been, there's a term being used called the fence sitters, you know, people sitting on the fence, somebody, you know, people
right,
that aren't
right.
sure if they want to go forward or if they want to stay, and there's been a lot of talk about how there's another Earth waiting for all those who choose not to ascend or, you know, continue on with this form of evolution or on this path of evolution. And really that it's coming in with the call when it does come in. This actually ties into all the stuff we've been talking about tonight.
Sure.
Even the moon expedition, you know, the Japanese going up there and they want to say something, you know, because they already know. You know they know. The Japanese are some of the richest guys in the world up there, you know. And you know they know that there's bases up there. So when they're spending their money to send a little craft up there to say, hey, we're going to go check it out, that's them saying to the rest of the global elite, it's saying, hey, we're going to go blow your cover and, you know, make it proof to our public so our public can tell the world. And, you know, and I guess there's some benevolent forces behind it. I wouldn't doubt that at all.
I know that it's pouring out on the earth, Jared, because you're in New York and Crystal's in British Columbia. Both of you are seeing the same thing. You're feeling the same thing. You're having dreams. You're having visions. You know that something grand is about to happen in this energy world we live in. And I appreciate you both so much calling in. I can't believe we've blown through 3 hours again. But I promise you, we'll be on next Sunday at the same time from 5:30 to 8:30 Pacific time. And I want you both to make sure that you call in. And I've got lots of people out there listening didn't get a chance to call in tonight, but I want to make sure that you guys put me on speed dial or something, because we want you to keep coming back, okay? All right? All right, we appreciate our callers so much, and here at X Squared Radio, we would be nothing without them. Thank goodness for BBS Radio. We'll be back next week with more of X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, peace, Earth Explorers.